We knocked over Saddam, and then we went in and we changed all the rules in Iraq to inflict shock therapy, the conservative corporatist worldview on Iraq.
It's the Tom Hartman program.
That it would create such a happy place that within 6 months we could simply come home. They so believed that there was no plan B. That's how crazed these guys are.
Tom Hartman, weekday mornings 10 to noon on KRXA 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Lou Valiano. It's over, then again, just beginning. The House resolution on the president's surge of troops. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss says the House passed it overwhelmingly this afternoon, 246 to 182.
Democrats, brought to power in large part by voters angry about the Iraq war, say this is an important vote. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
It's a bipartisan, non-binding resolution that should send a very clear and firm message to the President of the United States.
A message that the solution in Iraq lies in political and diplomatic efforts, not more American troops. Republican Roy Blunt sees it differently.
This non-binding resolution is the first step in an all-too-binding spiral toward defeat.
No one expects President Bush to listen to Congress on this, but Democrats warn if he doesn't, they'll start putting conditions on bills funding the war. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
The White House reaction said lawmakers were gambling on failure in Iraq. Meanwhile, the president's health was being dealt with at the White House.
In what a spokesman describes as a routine procedure, two small moles were removed from the president's left temple. The tissue will be analyzed, but White House physician Dr. Richard Tubb believes they are completely benign or non-cancerous. The spokesman says it took only 5 minutes for a dermatologist to administer a local anesthetic and remove the moles. We're told President Bush will have a scab at the site of the biopsy for about a week to 10 days. Mark Knoller, CBS News, the White House.
Big apology from Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell today on what motorists went through since Wednesday on I-78. Miles of stranded drivers, the guard being called out to rescue people, deliver baby formula, roads closed.
There were significant mistakes in judgment made and significant breakdown, almost a total breakdown in communications between state agencies.
Rendell said the state's handling of the storm and traffic backup was totally unacceptable. Was this Anna Nicole Smith had a will? Attorneys for her attorney boyfriend, not-so-legal husband, and maybe yes, maybe no father of her daughter, says she did. Mark Steinis is a correspondent with Entertainment Tonight.
One thing that comes straight in the face of this is Virgie Arthur, Anna Nicole's mother, her attorneys are stepping up saying this document isn't legal, it was never filed in court. But it is to our understanding that you don't need to file a will as long as it was legally executed for it to be a legal document.
Legal or not, the will puts all of Smith's stuff into a trust. Howard K. Stern will control for her, their daughter. Commerce Department's reporting a dramatic drop in the construction of new homes and apartments last month, a drop of over 14%, putting construction at the lowest level in nearly 10 years. The larger-than-expected drop in housing starts gave Wall Street a mixed performance today. The Dow closed at 12,767.5, a 2.5-point gain. This is CBS News.
No doubt about it. The Internet is a great place to hang out. Like blogging, for example. I love to blog. Maybe too much. When I think of all the hours I blogged. Anyway, you've probably spent a lot of time on the Internet, too. Isn't it time the Internet paid you back? Just 15 minutes at Geico.com could save you hundreds on car insurance. Now that's what I call payback.
Go to Geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
My name is Leslie, and I've been smoke-free for 6.5 months.
Quitting smoking is hard, but millions of people have succeeded.
My name is Brad, and I've been smoke-free for 15 months now.
If you decide to quit smoking, visit Quit Assist, a free resource that links you to a wealth of expert quitting information, including websites, guides, quit lines, and more. It could help you find your own way to success.
My name is Etta, and I have been smoke-free for 4 years.
Quit Assist, a free information resource. Log on at philipmorrisusa.com.
Does who slept here mean something to you? Want an historic house? In Minnesota, WCCO reporter Steve Murphy says Walter Mondale's old place is on the block.
The future vice president lived in the 19th century parsonage in tiny Elmore, Minnesota, back in the late 1930s and 40s. The current owners bought the home in 2003 for $15,000, spent the next 3 years fixing it up, and placed it on eBay with an opening bid of $50,000. Mondale wishes them well.
They called me and said they were going to do it. It's a lovely little home, and I hope it sells.
Mondale never lost his attachment for the house, even launching his 1984 presidential campaign from the back porch. Steve Murphy, CBS News, Minneapolis.
It's getting up in years. Maybe it's time to hang up the headdress. The University of Illinois says the school's mascot, Chief Illiniwek, will perform his last dance this month. The chief is 81. I'm Lou Malignano, CBS News.
Okay, this is how I run my business. I put receipts at the front of the shoebox. Unpaid invoices go in the back.
But, hon, what happens if you drop the shoebox?
I might cry a little.
You know, there's an easier way to manage your business. Use QuickBooks. It's so simple you can be up and running in under 15 minutes. With just a few clicks, QuickBooks software lets you send invoices, see who's paid you and who hasn't, and get ready for tax time.
Great. What'll I do with my shoebox?
Put shoes in it? Just throwing it out there.
QuickBooks. Better, faster, simpler. Get it at Staples, Office Depot, or Sam's Club.
In the search for ways to improve healthcare, we'd like to add another solution. I-beams. That's right, I-beams. A member of the American Institute of Architects can use I-beams to create spaces that enhance healing by easing a patient's mind, sharpening a surgeon's skill, softening a nurse's touch. Not bad for a hunk of iron. Get an AIA architect involved early. You'll feel much better. AIA. Good design makes a difference. Visit AIA.org.
One, two, three, four. Everybody talking about bagging, 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 bagging.
Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show for Friday, February 16th of 2007. As usual, live, unscripted, unrehearsed, and originating from San Francisco on the left coast of these United States. In Washington, a couple of hours ago, the House of Representatives passed a non-binding resolution rejecting the president's move to escalate our deployment of American forces in Iraq. And unfortunately, it was pretty much of a party-line vote, 246 to 182. Only 17 Republicans voted in favor of it. Sam Farr, the Democrat from Monterey, who was on with us yesterday, was hoping that it would be in the Republican count would be as much as 60 votes. That didn't happen. And two Democrats, I don't know their names yet, defected and voted against the resolution with the Republicans. We'll get some comment on that in just a moment. I want to tell you who else is on the show today. Christy Harden Smith returns in about a half an hour. She's the attorney who, a former attorney, we want to be correct about her bio, who has been blogging the Libby trial. She's going to give us a recap as the defense and prosecution have both rested, and they'll get final arguments, and it'll go to the jury early next week. And we're going to spend our second hour today with writer Chalmers Johnson. His new book is called Nemesis, subtitled The Last Days of the American Republic. And it's a sober assessment of the damage done by this administration and some before it. And as usual, Friday we talk about voting integrity. Brad Friedman will be with us in our third and final hour. And there are big problems with the Holt bill, which many hoped would address the serious inadequacies of electronic voting without a paper trail, without the appropriate follow-through and auditability. And we're going to talk about that contentious issue with Brad, among other things, coming up in our third and final hour today. At any moment, you can join this conversation. This is an interactive radio talk show, which is a fancy way of saying we take your phone calls, and we pay for the call at 888-5-PETER-B. That's toll-free, 888-573-8255. 8372. And anytime you like, you can email me, Peter, at peterbcollins.com, or our producer, Matt Renner, Matt, at peterbcollins.com. Joining us to give some reaction to the vote in the House and a pending vote, the Senate is going to actually work on Saturday, which is a rare occurrence, and they will take up the issue in general. As I understand it, there's going to be a vote on whether to hold a vote in the Senate tomorrow. But that should presage what the headcount might be when the resolution itself hits the floor after the President's Day break. That's the way I expect that to play out, but who knows? There could be some surprises. Joining us now is Mark Ivey. He is a member of Military Families Speak Out. He is a resident of California, lives in Silicon Valley area. And his son, Tyler, age 20, is a member of the 82nd Airborne and has recently been dispatched as part of the so-called surge to Baghdad. Mark, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Tell me your reaction to this non-binding resolution in the House.
Well, I think it's symbolic at best. I think it's a start, but I think there needs to be more done to make this current administration sit up and notice.
Mm-hmm. So ultimately, do you believe that we will have to move to cut off funding in order to get this president's attention and limit his adventurism?
I do believe that. He has said that he is not going to listen to what the Congress has to say as far as this non-binding resolution. So I think Congress needs to take action as far as defunding the war.
Now, as a parent of a soldier actively serving in the thick of it in Baghdad right now, how do you respond to the Republican talking points that the Democrats are going to hurt our troops by reining in the president on his wayward policies, his failed policies on this war?
I don't think personally that he's going to hurt the troops at all. At this point in time, my son and his unit is serving as basically police officers, babysitting sectarian violence, civil war in Iraq. And I think that what they're doing is not what they were trained to do. In fact, I know that to be the case.
Well, just on the face of it, a member of the 82nd Airborne should not be doing military police duties in the middle of a civil war.
Yes, that's what I believe. And I think that his unit is not prepared for the type of military operations that they're currently doing.
Mm-hmm. Mark, I don't know if you heard this, but over the last couple of days, they started some sweeps in Baghdad, attempting to clear and hold certain neighborhoods that they have repeatedly cleared but never held in the past. And it was represented to us in the president's speech and in the so-called plan that's taking us forward that U.S. troops would be used in supplement to Iraqi forces. And the president made a big deal about how he had forced Maliki, the leader of Iraq, to agree to commit more units of Iraqi police and army forces to this effort to secure Baghdad. And in the early sweeps, reported by the New York Times, the count was 200 Iraqi soldiers, 2,500 American soldiers. Does that match what the president projected this surge or this escalation was going to be like?
No, it does not. As I understood from his speech in January, that the Iraqi forces would be taking the lead in this sweep in Baghdad. And as I understand it, based upon what you're telling me in my conversations with my son, that is not the case.
Mm-hmm. Tell us what you've heard from Tyler.
Well, he is his unit is operating with Kurdish Iraqi soldiers. As I understand it, because they are Kurdish, they do not have the allegiances to either the Shia or the Sunni religious groups there in Baghdad. Tyler's unit is much larger than the Kurdish unit, and they are operating together. He says that he is not that impressed with the professionalism of the Iraqi soldiers that he has seen.
Well, and he must feel some sense of, how can I put it, comparative relief that he's not out there with openly Shiite members of the Iraqi Defense Force. Because many people, the reports indicate that there is ethnic cleansing going on, that under color of uniform, that the Shiite militias who have infiltrated the Defense Force have been basically using practices of ethnic cleansing against Sunnis, and clearly the Sunnis have been very active in retaliating or initiating provocations of their own. So if Tyler were serving with a unit that included Shia or Sunni members, one would think that he'd have to watch his back even more carefully.
Yes, that would be true.
Anything else that he's reported about the scene in Baghdad, about the morale of his colleagues?
Well, I can give you a little bit of background for his unit, is that his unit was deployed in Iraq last year, served 4 months in the Tikrit area of northern Iraq. They did return back to their base in December. We're told at that time that they would be spending anywhere from 8 months to 12 months back at their base, would be redeployed back to Iraq after that time. His unit was not at their base. They were at their base 5 days when they were informed, this was in December, that they would be returning back to Iraq to serve in Baghdad.
That's a real short turnaround.
Very short turnaround. Members of his unit had already made plans to get married, purchase homes. All those plans had to be put on hold. At the time, his unit was given a 2-week leave at Christmas time, which was also cut short due to the need to get back to the base. So his unit actually left for Iraq before President Bush actually addressed the nation.
All right. We're going to take a quick break and return. My guest is Mark Ivey. As you've heard, his son Tyler is a member of the 82nd Airborne. He's been redeployed to Iraq, and Mark is a member of Military Families Speak Out. We'll continue, and if you have a question or comment, you can join us right now, toll-free, at 888-5-PETER-B. The number again is 888-573-8372. It's 17 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, our good friend Jim Ross will be on. Jim will be talking about the free seminar on Tuesday, February 20th at 6 p.m. at the Westin Hotel at the San Francisco Airport in Millbrae. Hear how you can buy undervalued pre-construction real estate in the hottest areas of the United States. For more information on this event, call 916-941-9977. That's 916-941-9977. Rock Roller Real Estate. Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Aloha, I'm Jay.
And I'm Ginger.
And we would like to invite you to our family restaurant at Pizza Paradise, serving the biggest, best, and boldest pizzas from our Marina location at 215 Reservation Road. It's in the Marina Village Shopping Center across from Wells Fargo Bank. Try one of our specialty pizzas like the Ginger's Island Paradise, or for the meat lovers, a Meet Me in Paradise. We're open Tuesday through Sunday and offer a banquet room for up to 80 people. We deliver to Marina and CSUMB.
Call 582-9149.
It's a Pizza Paradise.
That's 582-9149.
Hi, this is Scott Dick, your host of the Tasty Planet Radio Show. Every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m., I explore the world of food, wine, and travel across the U.S. and around the world. I interview authors, chefs, winemakers, restaurateurs, brewers, and others that make our world so delicious. Join me and my guests every Saturday from 1 to 4 p.m. for tasty new shows, or visit the Tasty Planet on the web by going to www.tastyplanet.org. Listen in and have a good appetite.
There was this man who almost learned to walk at a rehab center that almost got built by people who almost gave. Almost gave. How good is almost giving? About as good as almost walking. As generous a nation as we are, sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. Don't almost give. Give. Visit our website at don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Continues.
Those who start wars, never fight them. Those who fight wars, never like them. Those who write laws, they can't recite them. Just fight laws, we live and die them. But I know they're never gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies. It's time, it's time to go home.
The House passed a resolution this afternoon, non-binding, expressing the sentiment that it's time to come home from Iraq. The vote was 246 to 182. Only 17 Republicans crossed over to support the Democrats on this measure. And that suggests to me that this is going to be a hard slog to build support, because it's going to be principled Republicans who really make the difference in this debate. The Democrats are more or less unified now around a position of extrication from Iraq, but the Republicans, well, they're confused and kind of looking out for their self-interest and Also, many of them still under the thumb of the White House. Mark Ivey is with us from Military Family Speak Out. As we mentioned, his 20-year-old son, Tyler, is serving right now in Baghdad with the 82nd Airborne. And, Mark, was there dissension in your family about Tyler's decision to serve and, more particularly, his decision to return to Iraq with this redeployment?
No, there was no dissension when Tyler initially joined the military 2 years ago. My wife and I are very, very supportive. We're very proud of what he's doing. My father, his grandfather, was a career 28-year Army officer who had a profound effect on Tyler growing up. Tyler's always wanted to join the military. We've been very supportive of that. We were apprehensive about him joining during a time of war, but we were very supportive and very proud of what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I are speaking out against this surge, against the war at this point in time, because it is just current administration is not listening to the American public. With the Baker-Hamilton study group that came out late last year, President Bush and the administration was given quite a few different options that they have totally ignored. And I think they're charting their own course. They're not listening to the American public. So I felt it was time that I speak out, and there's an unwritten code for military families that they do not say anything publicly about whether they support or not support a war. And I just think it's time that people stand up and be counted.
Well, then, Mark, what you represent is that you oppose the policy and you fully support the troops.
Exactly. That is very much so.
That is suggested as some kind of a duality that approaches a contradiction, at least when you listen to the arguments from the right.
Well, I think they are being disingenuous when they are saying that you cannot be against the war and, on the other hand, support the troops. I think you can.
Mm-hmm. So what would you like to see happen? We have what appears to be a progressive ratcheting up expected from the Democrats, and we have John Murtha's proposal, which would tie the president's hands through policy, that he couldn't deploy more troops unless they were trained, ready, equipped, and had proper rotation and rest, which apparently would preclude the president from dispatching further forces to the current war zone. Do you see that as a worthwhile step, or do you think that we need to go straight for the jugular, as Russ Feingold in the Senate and Dennis Kucinich in the House have proposed?
I think we should go right for the jugular. I think we should defund this war. I think we would be doing a disservice to the 130,000 troops that are already there by just cutting off funding for this surge that's going on right now. I think the whole war should be defunded. There is plenty of money in the current appropriations bill that was passed last September to bring our troops home safely. And I think it's time to end the war.
Mm-hmm. Another interesting element, one of our contributors, Scott Dick, on the program yesterday cited the Food and Forage Act from 1861, which essentially ensures that the troops will always be fed, clothed, and housed. And it flies in the face of the arguments, again, that we're hearing from the opponents of the resolution and those who oppose a rational policy here. And I think it is a red herring and basically untrue. About a minute remaining, Mark Ivey, if you could speak to President Bush the way Cindy Sheehan has tried so hard to, what would you say to him?
I would say that he needs to take into account what his policies have done to military families throughout the United States, what it's doing to the family units. Overall, his policies have been a failure. It wasn't until January of this year in his speech that he finally admitted to mistakes in the war, almost 4 years after the war began. And I feel he he is just continuing a policy of what he's done in the past few years.
Mm-hmm. Well, and when asked to enumerate on exactly what those mistakes were, he had the most bizarre answers, Abu Ghraib, which one can easily agree with, and then he said, well, I shouldn't have said bring it on. I think he's missing the big picture there. Mark Ivey, thank you for speaking out, and thank you for talking on our program today.
Thank you for having me.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand Avenue is your one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, liquors, and beers at very reasonable prices. Let PG Liquors knowledgeable owner J.R. Medina and his son-in-law Chad help you choose the ideal Monterey regional or imported wine for any occasion, from an intimate dinner with that special someone to a formal affair with dozens or even hundreds of guests. If you're looking for distilled spirits, PG Liquors specializes in the finest blue agave tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and top-shelf vodkas, including Northern California's own Hangar One. Beer lovers from Carmel to Marina, beat a path to PG Liquors, which boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales, lagers, stouts, porters, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand, just above Lighthouse, the outlet for all of your beverage needs.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Concerned about the steady increase in home mortgage interest rates? Don't panic or overreact. Now is the time to analyze the many available options and to choose the best possible course. Leverage the equity in your home to reduce or eliminate high interest and non-deductible debt. Victor Munoz, president of Creative Mortgage, invites you for a free consultation in his Salinas offices at 201 John Street. To schedule your free Creative Mortgage consultation, call Victor at 757-0436 right now. That's 757-0436.
Join me, Deborah Lindsay, each Sunday afternoon at 2 for Tomorrow Matters. We'll be matching the global problems of today with the local solutions for a better tomorrow. I'll bring in the guests, and you call with the questions and ideas, and collectively we'll set the standards for a more sustainable future, because for all of us, tomorrow matters. Join me right here on KRXA 540 AM for Tomorrow Matters each Sunday at 2.
Hello, I'm here to tell you about Central Avenue Bakery in beautiful Pacific Grove. Every day we feature the finest and freshest healthy whole grain foods with vegan and wheat-free options for those so inclined. We mill our own organic, fresh whole grain flour daily. Galina, our Russian pastry chef, turns those fresh whole grains into delicious masterpieces. Muffins, cakes, cookies, pies, banana chocolate bars, macaroons. She adds new items all the time. We also have a variety of whole grain breads, fresh homemade sandwiches, soups, and veggie entrees made with mostly organic ingredients. Our all-you-can-eat Sunday buffet with the top vegetarian entrees, soups, salads, and desserts is locally famous. We also welcome groups, parties, and catering orders. Stop in for a latte, snack, or full meal. You'll come back again and again. Come visit us at 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey and the Old Granary Building, just 2 blocks from the aquarium. Or give us a call at 373-2000. That's 373-2000. Central Avenue Bakery, where healthy and delicious go hand in hand.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service now has 3 locations to serve you better wherever you live. All 3 locations feature full service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or, in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Specializing in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for friendly, fast, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service. Now located in Santa Cruz at 1807 Soquel Avenue across from Walgreens, in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road and Soquel Drive, and now in Aptos Village across the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Call 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service, full service.
Is how we do it.
On display in Washington, D.C. the last few weeks at the trial of Scooter Libby on charges of perjury and obstruction of justice, we've gotten a kind of step-by-step lesson in How We Do It in the Bush-Cheney White House.
This is how we do it. It's Friday night.
Yeah, we got a little tip on how we smear, how we leak.
The party's here on the west side.
And how we intimidate the Congress.
Designated driver, take the keys to my truck.
And Dick Cheney didn't take the stand. Scooter Libby didn't take the stand. Karl Rove, nowhere in sight. Pardon me, but it looks like they're going to rely on the presidential pardon power to fix this one. To get some commentary on the Libby trial this week, we return to Christy Harden-Smith, who was with us last week. She blogs as Redhead with two Ds at FiredogLake.com. Hello, Christy.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm doing great, and we'll mention just in passing that Christy holds herself out as a former lawyer, right?
Yeah, I'm no longer practicing. I'm a recovering attorney, as I like to say.
Yeah, and is there a 12-step program, or does it take many more steps than that?
Oh, lots more steps than 12.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to get your recap, and Matt was talking with you just before we went on the air and stumbled and called it a re-crap. But I want to get your recap of the Libby trial. But first, you had a post this morning at Fire Dog Lake, which tags on a piece that Murray Wass published yesterday. And it gave us an insight into this mentality. This is how we do it at the White House. As Dick Cheney made a personal call to former Senator Bob Graham, who was chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee for a minute there, after the Jeffords flip put the Democrats in control of the Senate for a little while. And Bob Graham was shaving as Cheney rang him up early in the morning to chew him out. Tell us a little bit about this and what it means to us.
Well, you know, Murray has done some fantastic reporting all along in this leak case. And the article that came out yesterday that he did for the National Journal was just really very insightful. He called Senator Graham at home while he was shaving, and Senator Graham took the phone in one hand and had his razor in the other, according to what he told Murray Wass, and basically chewed him out for a leak that occurred with regard to some congressional investigations that were going on into a number of things that the Bush administration had been doing. And he pushed really hard to have that leak investigated. And the really ironic thing about that was the push that he did led an FBI agent whose name is Eckenrode, his last name is Eckenrode, and folks who've been following the Libby case will recognize that name, into looking into those leaks. And he was stymied in his investigation, not just of that, but also in an investigation of Senator Richard Shelby, who was accused of doing some of the leaking from Congress in a partisan manner, and wasn't able to get any further in his investigation because journalists were refusing to talk to the FBI about the leaks that had been going on, even though it was about illegal behavior. They were refusing to talk to the FBI at all because, you know, they didn't want to reveal sources. And he couldn't get anybody at the Department of Justice to help him push. Now, you know, maybe that's because Senator Shelby is a Republican senator. You know, I don't know what the reason was that the Department of Justice under, the former Attorney General Ashcroft,
right. Why
he wasn't helping out with that. But when the leak happened with Valerie Plame Wilson's name, when Pat Fitzgerald was appointed to be special prosecutor, he was willing to listen to Eckenrode about the problems he had had with journalists and found a legal way around that problem. And here we are with the Libby case. So it's kind of fascinating that Cheney's push initially back, you know, in the early days of the Bush administration, trying to really put his thumb down on anybody saying anything bad about the Bush administration to anyone, led to the very thorough investigation that was done in terms of getting to the bottom of who leaked Valerie Plame Wilson's name.
Well, and Christy, this conversation between Cheney and Senator Graham included essentially a threat that if any more leaks came out of the of Capitol Hill, that the president was going to go public and basically just declare that the Congress could no longer be trusted, and he was cutting them out of any intelligence sharing. Now, the threat was actually carried out in most respects.
Pretty much, and that was done really with the help of the Republicans who chaired both intelligence committees. Senator Pat Roberts of Kansas was the chair of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and then Peter Hoekstra was the chair of the House Intel Committee for the longest time, and mm-hmm. both of them stymied a lot of attempts to look into things and perform oversight and require accountability with regard to a lot of intelligence matters. I think we're still waiting for that phase two report on the Iraq intelligence that what we've been waiting for a couple of years now.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. And Carl Levin's still pushing for it, but it appears that this summer would be the earliest that we'll see it.
Yeah.
And, of course, it was due to be published before the 2004 presidential election.
Yeah, funny how that got put off, isn't it?
They're just so busy. You know, it's like Scooter Libby. There's so many things on his plate. How do you get around to completing a silly little intelligence report, you know, about the pre-war use of the information and all that? It just doesn't matter anymore. It's just for finger-pointing, right?
Well, you know, you would hope, and the intelligence committees in both houses of Congress traditionally have been very much a bipartisan committee on both sides of things. It has always been about putting the national security of the country first and not politicizing those committees, because so much of what is done on those committees is behind closed doors and the public doesn't get to know about them anyway. There's really no need to do the political tap dance with mm-hmm. regard to that information. It's too important to do that. But the last 6 years, that's what we've seen. And, you know, I personally find that very appalling.
Well, and while you're talking about the power and secrecy of the Senate Intelligence Committee, and for that matter, the House Intelligence Committee, next hour, Chalmers Johnson is going to be with us. His new book is called Nemesis. And in it, he explained to me for the first time where earmarks came from. Earmarks came from senators who would put money into the black budget for the CIA. And they went to town on it and then just ran amok as the earmark process expanded beyond the CIA black budget. We'll go into that in detail next hour. Christy Harden-Smith with us from FireDogLake.com. If you have a question or a comment about the Libby trial, feel free to give us a call, toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. Now, Christy, were you surprised at how limited a defense was put on for Scooter Libby?
You know, I was, but I think part of that was because they decided they couldn't put Libby himself on the stand.
Mm-hmm.
After the 8 hours of grand jury testimony that the government played, it was going to be very difficult for them to put him on the stand and have him be able to testify with any amount of credibility, because any contradiction or any really definite statement that he would be able to make in terms of facts or what he remembered would be balanced against his very hesitant, very halting testimony that he gave before the grand jury. And I think the jurors would have been looking at that, you know, thinking, why didn't you do this before the grand jury? Why wait until you're on trial, you know, for a crime? Why not tell the truth before the grand jury instead?
Mm-hmm.
So once they decided that they couldn't put Libby on the stand, I think they were very limited in other witnesses that they were able to bring in, because the memory issues that they would have been able to bring out with Libby, they couldn't bring out because they hadn't put him on the stand. So
now, I know
they legally limited themselves.
I know that Ted Wells is a highly respected criminal attorney who has been able to get people acquitted without putting them on the stand in the past.
Mm-hmm.
That said, how did they ever imagine that Libby could help himself by testifying, or that Cheney could help him by testifying? And in laying the groundwork for this trial, they managed to apparently really piss off Judge Walton by representing that Libby would testify in his own behalf, and then very late in the game saying, well, never mind.
Well, and the reason that particularly ticked off the judge is because they went through months of SEPA hearings, and that's the procedure that you go through in order to allow classified intelligence information to be presented in a trial.
Mm-hmm.
They had to go through, you know, hearing after hearing after hearing on this classified information because it was stuff that Libby was going to testify about. They were, you know, they had other witnesses who testified about specifics with regard to, you know, some of this classified information that Libby had been briefed on. We heard from Craig Schmall, who was the CIA briefer who briefed both Scooter Libby and Vice President Cheney at various points in time while all of this was going on. And a lot of that information would not have come in because it's highly classified. I mean, the sorts of national security breaches that you worry about are not exactly the things that you want them talking about publicly because, mm-hmm. you know, you can expose some of the assets who bring that information into the CIA or to the Defense Intelligence Agency or other agencies. And you don't ever want to talk about that publicly if you can help it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to bring that in just by saying that Libby was going to testify. And when they decided to have him not do that, I think that's where the judge got very annoyed.
Mm-hmm. And is that any grounds for sanction against the attorneys?
No. I think tactically, you know, once you see how things are going in the trial, you have to make a decision based on your client's best interest. I think if there was some way to show that they knew all along Libby wasn't going to testify, mm-hmm. that they had deliberately misrepresented that to the judge,
right.
that would be one thing. But, in this case, I think they just saw that tactically it was going to be a very bad move to put him on the stand.
And come back to my earlier question, how did they ever imagine that putting Libby or Cheney on the stand would help their cause?
I have absolutely no idea. To be perfectly honest, I do not know how they could possibly think, you know, especially with all of the evidence that points directly toward Vice President Cheney having quite a bit of involvement in directing this response, how they could have thought that Vice President Cheney's testimony was going to somehow be helpful, or how Scooter Libby was going to be able to go on the stand and, you know, be conversant in what happened and the facts and everything that was going on when, you know, most of his defense is, well, my difficult job made me forget and lie.
Mm-hmm. Well, and so, the thing is, I have a plausible scenario here. Let me try it out on you, Christy. Mm-hmm. And that is that nobody has ever entrusted me with classified information. And I'm relieved by that because I'm the kind of guy who would have a hard time remembering explicitly which details are classified and which are not about, you know, some specific case or event or report. And so if I were in Ted Wells or Scooter Libby's position, I would have argued only that he forgot it was classified, not this bizarre claim that he forgot that he had learned it from Cheney when he learned it from Tim Russert, who didn't tell him.
Yeah, that claim is, I mean, it's really a stretch. And you know, there are a couple of theories on that. Marcy Wheeler, who's been doing some of the live blogging for us,
mm-hmm.
Has a theory on the Russert angle that they've been trying to push. And it's that, you know, Tim Russert was one of the only other journalists that Scooter Libby had spoken with the week that he and Judy Miller had their breakfast meeting. So, you know, when you went back through his calendar, there were very few people he could point a finger at and say, maybe this is who I learned it from, if he was trying to avoid at all costs saying that he learned it from Vice President Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
So that may be why.
The other defense, you know, early in the, I guess, in the opening argument from Wells, the case was made that this is an attempt to shift blame from Rove to Libby.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't appear that they've buttressed that claim in any significant way through testimony or introduction of evidence. And so, again, when I look at that, if I were Libby, I'd say, you know, I was instructed to use a cover story. And this is because these are sensitive national security issues during a time of war. And the vice president told me, he authorized me, to leak this information and use the cover story that blamed it on the press for telling us about Valerie Plame Wilson's identity.
That might be something that you could do, but then you might be implicating yourself in a conspiracy, which would then mean wider...
Mm-hmm.
You know, prosecution throughout
right.
several people who were involved in it. And I think they were trying to, you know, mitigate that as much as possible, especially with regard to Vice President Cheney.
And with that in mind, would you say that Scooter Libby used the most aggressive possible defense of his case?
You know, that's tough. Second-guessing the attorneys from the outside is a tough thing to do because
yeah.
I've been in a position defending clients when I was doing defense work
mm-hmm.
Where you have a client who refuses to plead, who refuses to take a deal if it's offered, refuses to cooperate with the government because that's almost always you know, a requirement of any plea deal that you get, that you have to cooperate and give information with regard to other people who are involved.
Understood.
So if you go to trial because you have a client who's not going to enter a plea, then, you know, you have to work with what you have to work with. And if you've got a client who, you know, there's a lot of evidence and information about them being guilty, and all you can do is hope that you can get one juror or two jurors, you know, to not convict, then, you know, you do the best you can with what you have. And that may be the case.
We're talking with Christy Harden-Smith. We'll take a break and return. FireDogLake.com is where you can read her posts about the Libby trial and other issues. And we'll go to the phones in the next segment at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. I'm your humble host, Peter B. Collins. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Billy Sunshine Show.
Billy Sunshine Show.
With P-Lar. With P-Lar.
Sunday at 3 o'clock, we're going to be doing something new, something different. Or we'll do the same old thing. Take your phone calls. One thing we know for sure, I'll have something to say. What? I don't know. I never know until I've said it. Find out what's the next thing to come out of my mouth.
The Billy Sunshine Show with P-Lar.
Sundays from 3 to 5. 3 to 5.
On AM 540. KRXA.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
There's more than one side to every issue. Actually, there's usually more than two sides. It's important to get a different perspective on issues and current events, and that's what we'll provide you on Thursday nights at 10 on KRXA 540. Our show is called, appropriately enough, A Different Perspective. I'm Jack Quirk, and I'm your host. I have guests with a unique angle on current issues. I'm often joined by Phil Rapp and other guest co-hosts who bring their own expertise to our discussions. Join us each Thursday night at 10 for A Different Perspective here on KRXA 540.
Vote means that our investigation turned up nothing.
Could somebody testify lying before a grand jury? Doesn't mean he's involved.
And it's flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and declare an emergency.
It's all crazy propaganda. The Joseph Goebbels Network.
Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
It is certain that some self-possessed judge somewhere will soon rule that three men are three women can rule.
Yet Iraqis are united in a broad and deep conviction. 12 government ministries are currently under the direct control of Iraqis. I don't think that's too high a standard.
If you've retired, you don't have anything to worry about. Probably say it three more times. See, in my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. Got to catapult the propaganda.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. 52 minutes past the hour, or 8 minutes before the next, whatever you prefer. Christy Harden-Smith is with us. She blogs as Redhead with two D's at FireDogLake.com. And also joining us from FireDog Lake is David, who blogs as T-Rex. And you guys give me a little envy here. I feel like I need a more exotic name, like Didn't Sleep with Anna Nicole.
This week that would get you a lot of play on CNN.
David, welcome. Are you there, David? Oh, I didn't punch up his button. No wonder. It's my fault. Go ahead, David.
I was saying apparently you don't have to sleep with Anna Nicole. You can just have some banked DNA somewhere. I was just going to bring up in regards to the Libby trial, this is something that I had discussed with Christy earlier, but we never got a chance to really finish it out. I was wondering how much she thinks of the defense's case was possibly undermined by the fact that so much direct information about the trial was making it out to the media via the live blogging that Marcy and Swopo were doing before the Spin Masters had a chance to get their hands on it and direct the conventional wisdom on the case.
Very interesting. Well, first, let me just gratuitously thank everybody at Fire Dog Lake. I've been very impressed with the work, and the Media Bloggers Association, I think it's called, negotiated with the judge to get this unprecedented access and real-time delivery. So I think it's been terrific. Christy, your comment?
Well, you know, I think with the way that everything's come out as real-time coverage that we've been able to do, I think that has cut through a lot of the spin. David and I were talking about this earlier today, that it's very difficult to start some sort of media narrative or get, you know, everyone on the same page when people are reading the actual, you know, what's going on in real time. You know, it's impossible to spin it as a story later on when everyone's seeing for themselves what's actually going on in terms of testimony or in terms of, you know, questioning in the courtroom. So I really do think that that's helped to cut through at least the political spin that may have been able to come out of this.
Well, I think it's also served as a kind of check on having the mainstream media completely ignore this case. It was interesting because the New York Times had a feature story about Fire Dog Lake that ran on the front page, and its actual coverage of the Libby trial that day was buried on page 7 or 8.
That was kind of funny, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. But they did, of course, manage to at least attempt to marginalize the bloggers by essentially saying, well, this is nice for the real hardcore news junkies. But, you know, one of the themes, and Christy, I think I mentioned this to you last week, I heard this expressed on the public radio show on the media, was this dismissive approach of saying, this is not really important, but we're going to tell you about it anyway.
Well, you know, I think part of it is because the media comes off looking so badly in so many respects in this. I mean, you had Tim Russert on the stand testifying, saying that he treats every conversation that he has with an official as off the record unless they tell him something that he finds to be personally useful, and then he asks them if he can use that conversation. That's not what I understand, you know, a journalist's job to be. Their job is to get the information to the public, not to protect the people who are giving them the information. So, you know, I think there are a lot of questions that are going to come out of this.
I think it was Ariana that said, that's not reporting, that's enabling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That
very
is
good.
It's
which
true.
I think is fantastic.
All right, David, anything else?
Just thanks for having us.
Thanks for your call. I appreciate that.
Take care.
Cece, Lake Placid, New York. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Oh, no, that's Lake Placid, Florida.
Oh, okay. I'll take it.
Anyhow, I've been following the trial with Christy on Fire Dog Lake, and I was just wondering if she's going to be blogging the impeachment trial.
Which one?
George Bush.
Well, I think that's highly speculative. Do you want to tackle that one, Christy?
Well, you know, if and when that comes, if we can get press credentials, I'm sure we'll be there.
Okay, look forward to it, Christy.
Cece, tell me what you have most enjoyed or benefited from in accessing the blog coverage.
Because it's the only way that you hear about what's going on in the trial. If you left it to the mainstream media, you wouldn't know anything. So I like the truthiness of it. And just the way they present everything is just great. And it's, it really keeps you going.
Great. Well, Cece, I'm only sorry I accused you of being a New Yorker.
That's okay. I'm originally from New York. So
okay.
That's okay.
Thanks for your call. Good to have you listening.
Okay. Bye.
So, Christy, is what I speculated about at the opening of this segment, is the pardon, the route that Libby's expecting will relieve him from this pain?
You know, I think that one of the things we saw in the opening statements that Ted Wells did, talking about Libby being a scapegoat in some way for Karl Rove, talking about, you know, the vice president's note saying that, you know, Libby had been in the meat grinder, I think was the terminology that the vice president used. You didn't see that actually come out in any of the testimony. And I think Wells is going to have to go back and explain that in his closing a little bit to the jury. But in terms of the public perception stuff, I think that may have been the first salvo in an attempt to get Libby a pardon. I think, you know, Barbara Comstock, who's the PR person that was hired to do PR and media relations for the Libby team, used to work for Dan Burton when Dan Burton was doing all the hearings into the Sox Christmas card list and anything else he could find on the Clinton White House.
Well, now just remind us that Scooter Libby was the guy who negotiated with the Clinton White House to get the infamous pardon for Mark Rich. So
absolutely,
he knows a little something about the pardon game.
Yes, he does.
Christy.
And Barbara Comstock brought Fred Thompson, who you may recall was the...
Love boat guy.
Yeah, well, no. He was
Senator from Tennessee.
Yeah. He also was counsel during the Watergate hearings for the minority.
Christy, I'm out of time. I got to stop us there. Fascinating to talk with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter.
Christy Harden-Smith, FireDogLake.com.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Hi, this is Stephanie Miller. You know how much I love the Monterey Peninsula. You've got it all. Mountains, the sea, some of the best box wine I've ever had. You also have a great radio station, KRXA, your progressive prescription. So join me, voice guy extraordinaire Jim Ward, and producer Chris Lavoie as we take back America every weekday morning, 6 to 9 a.m., right here on AM 540.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. The House votes against the troop surge.
The concurrent resolution is accepted without objection. A motion to reconsider is laid upon the table.
Airport delays 2 days after the storm.
There has to be 7,000 to 8,000 people here. And nothing's moving.
This is the CBS World News Roundup Late Edition. I'm Bill Whitney. After 4 days of debate, the House voted 246 to 182 for the resolution expressing disapproval of President Bush's new strategy in Iraq. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss begins our coverage.
The House vote was definitive. Congress is now on record against sending more troops to Iraq. 17 Republicans joining Democrats in a message put succinctly by California's Henry Waxman.
We will not stand for more of the same.
Republicans warned the vote would undermine morale and encourage America's enemies, or in the case of Adam Putman, do nothing at all.
And all of this is for what? To send a message or settle a score with our commander-in-chief?
But Democratic Speaker Nancy Pelosi says voters in November demanded a change in Iraq.
This resolution today sets the stage for that new direction.
The next step after this non-binding resolution, trying to attach conditions to a bill funding the war that will be before Congress next month. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
White House.
Members of Congress are taking their own gamble here. They're gambling on failure.
Knowing the president would lose the vote, spokesman Tony Snow portrayed it in stark terms, even as he downplayed its significance.
This is, quote, a non-binding resolution. But what we're afraid of is that this is, in fact, going to serve as a precursor for cutting off our troops.
And that the president cannot permit. Snow says Mr. Bush stands by his Iraq strategy and will be very aggressive with Congress to get the funding for U.S. troops there. Mark Knoller, CBS News, the White House.
In the Senate, Democratic leaders have set a rare Saturday vote to put Republicans on the spot. The question is whether to proceed with debate on an Iraq war resolution. Now this.
Did you know your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury may be trying to tell you something? Just look at your oil change sticker or your odometer. They tell an important message, when to change your oil. And when it is time, be sure to visit your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer. Right now, the Works Fuel Saver Package is just $36.95 or less. That's a Motocraft Synthetic Blend Oil Change, Tire Rotation, Fluid Top Off, Multi-Point Inspection, and more. Just $36.95. And no appointment is necessary. Now that's convenient. Genuine Ford parts. Expert service. Low prices. We've got everything you need.
You need a hand, I can assure you.
genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury parts and service. We're better. We're proving it. And we want you to be the judge. Hurry into your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer today. Up to 5 quarts oil, taxes, and diesel vehicles extra. Disposal fee may apply. See participating dealership for service hours and details through 31807.
It's the aftermath of the winter storm that hit the east on Wednesday. JetBlue still struggling to recover from its meltdown. Mario Dominguez is supposed to be in Fort Lauderdale tomorrow for his in-laws' anniversary cruise, but his flight out of Boston's Logan Airport was canceled.
This has been happening to people all day. They've canceled one flight after another. And then there's flights that are going out tomorrow, but they say that we can't be put on those flights because we can't bump the people that are on the flights tomorrow.
Dominguez says JetBlue offered him a refund, but no help booking him on another airline. In Pennsylvania, Governor Ed Rendell says it's totally unacceptable that sections of major interstates are still icebound. Trucker Debbie Skinner, stranded on I-81 in Pine Grove, is relying on the kindness of strangers.
They opened up the cafeteria for the high school and the gym, and they brought out cots and blankets for the other motorists, for the four-wheelers, as we call them, and they even allowed their animals, their dogs and stuff inside.
When reporters asked Dr. Z the other day, Daimler-Chrysler chairman Dieter Zetsche refused to rule out a sale of Chrysler. Now, Automotive News reports there are high-level negotiations on a proposal for General Motors to buy Chrysler. Peter Brown is editorial director.
The talks are continuing, so, you know, you have to regard anything as possible. There's a lot of pressure on Daimler-Chrysler from shareholders about the losses at Chrysler, and they don't want to eat those.
Chrysler announced a restructuring this week that will cut 13,000 jobs. Ray Evans, a legendary Hollywood songwriter, has died at 92. With partner Jay Livingston, Evans wrote some memorable tunes, including this big hit for Nat King Cole.
Mona Lisa, men have named you.
Evans and Livingston wrote the Christmas standard, Silver Bells, Doris Day's theme, Que Sera, Sera, and the theme to the TV show, Mr. Ed.
A horse is a horse, of course, and no one can talk to a horse, of course. That is, of course, unless the horse is the fame.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
No doubt about it, the Internet is a great place to hang out. Like blogging, for example. I love to blog. Maybe too much. When I think of all the hours I blogged. Anyway, you've probably spent a lot of time on the Internet, too. Isn't it time the Internet paid you back? Just 15 minutes at GEICO.com could save you hundreds on car insurance. Now that's what I call payback.
Go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
My name is Leslie, and I've been smoke-free for 6.5 months.
Quitting smoking is hard, but millions of people have succeeded.
My name is Brad, and I've been smoke-free for 15 months now.
If you decide to quit smoking, visit Quit Assist, a free resource that links you to a wealth of expert quitting information, including websites, guides, quit lines, and more. It could help you find your own way to success.
My name is Etta, and I have been smoke-free for 4 years.
Quit Assist, a free information resource.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, live from San Francisco.
I'm proud to be an American. I'm proud of all the good things we've done. There's television, free words, and rock and roll, and an old Times Square, Jim and Eric, Oprah, Wells, and Bokeh Bear, mass production, reconstruction, these four and lots more.
Well, with the Bush presidency secured by the 5-4 Supreme Court vote, an elective unilateral adventure in Iraq that has turned into one of the biggest blunders in American foreign policy history. The NSA spying Guantanamo Bay, extraordinary rendition. It's hard to be proud of these United States at this particular time. And perhaps you believe that our future is on the downside, on the downslide. Chalmers Johnson, retired professor from University of California at San Diego and the president of the Japan Policy Research Institute, is the author of a new book called Nemesis, The Last Days of the American Republic. Professor, thanks for joining us on the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Thank you, Mr. Collins. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nice to talk with you. And this was an accidental trilogy. Is that how you describe it?
Yes. It started out as a book called Blowback, The Costs and Consequences of American Empire, that was published a year before 9/11. I'm primarily a specialist in China, Japan, the two Koreas in East Asia.
Mm-hmm.
My book was a statement that I believed much of the foreign policy of the 21st century was going to be dominated by the results of clandestine operations we had carried out during the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
Blowback is a CIA term. It was first used in the after-action report after the overthrow of the government of Iran in 1953, our first such caper, in which the agency wrote, we're going to get some blowback from this. They knew full well that they had accused the elected president or prime minister of Iran, Mohammad Mossadegh, of being a communist. The Pope would have been a better candidate. They did it for the sake of the British Petroleum Company, that is, it was then the Anglo-Iranian oil company, that resisted Mossadegh's trying to get paid properly for Iranian oil. The book was nicely received, but certainly did not make an impact until after 9/11 when it became a bestseller.
And I wanted to underscore here, I'm looking at the very final pages of the new book, Nemesis, where you describe the three books. And in particular, you're more explicit in defining blowback. It refers to retaliation for the numerous illegal operations we have carried out abroad that were kept totally secret from the American public.
Yes.
That means that when the retaliation comes, as it did on September 11th, the American public is unable to put the events in context.
The president can get away with things like, why do they hate us?
Yeah, they hate our freedom.
When they hate our freedom, when in fact Osama bin Laden made absolutely clear in a statement he released after 9/11 that the objectives were, first of all, resistance to the Americans' decision to put U.S. troops in Saudi Arabia after the first Gulf War, their opposition to the Israeli-Palestine conflict. They said that Americans will never know peace so long as they only back the Israelis. And his third item was opposition to the fact that 500,000 Iraqi children had died during the 1990s, in which President Clinton had called the most rigorous regime of sanctions ever carried out.
Excuse me, Professor.
These are our standard causes of war, not fighting us because of our values, our wealth, our the things that Bush cited.
But if you continue in this vein, I'm going to have to report you to Homeland Security as a self-hating American.
I don't know about self-hating. I think it's the other way around. I am an American who would very much like to preserve what's going on here, and I see our way of life, our constitutional government, really imperiled. Mm-hmm. That is, we are approaching a tipping point, and once you pass it, we won't be able to come back.
Yeah. The second book that you wrote, The Sorrows of Empire, I'm paraphrasing here, was written during the American preparations for the invasions and occupations of Afghanistan and Iraq. You studied the continuous military buildup since World War II and the 737 military bases that we currently maintain in other people's countries. That's a staggering number.
Well, that's our empire. And these are... You listen to propagandists from the Pentagon, but these are not Marine guards at U.S. embassies. We haven't nearly any that many embassies abroad. These are real military bases except in Islamic countries, the continuous litany of rapes, drunk driving, pollution, one thing after another, that in a place like Okinawa, Japan's southernmost prefecture and a longtime ally.
Mm-hmm.
But we have 37 American bases on an island smaller than Kauai in the Hawaiian Islands, and revolt against us has been endemic now for 50 years.
Well, and it doesn't help that we have soldiers who get drunk and attack and rape and do other things to the women of Okinawa.
Well, particularly when the 1,300,000 Okinawans assuredly did not invite us in.
Yes.
We did that through military force. That's imperialism.
And let me read a paragraph here. In Nemesis, I have tried to present historical, political, economic, and philosophical evidence of where our current behavior is likely to lead. Specifically, I believe that to maintain our empire abroad requires resources and commitments that will inevitably undercut our domestic democracy and in the end produce a military dictatorship or its civilian equivalent. That's a very dark statement, and I'm sorry to say I find it fully accurate under the current circumstances, Professor.
Well, it's a dark statement, but let me try and explain it. That is, history tells us that there is no more unstable configuration than the one in the United States today, a domestic democracy and a foreign empire. They fight with each other. You can have one, you can have the other, you can't have both. The classic case was the Roman Republic, which is important to us since so much of our Constitution was modeled after the famous checks and balances in the Roman Republic. It, after the death of Caesar, it succumbed to its commitment to imperialism. It decided to maintain its empire, and it lost its democracy to military dictatorship. Democracy did not return for well over 1,000 years. I'm trying to argue there is an alternative. It's not quite as clear-cut, but it's a good historical case. The British Empire, after World War II, recognized quite clearly that in order to hang on to India, as well as the rest of the British Empire, but particularly India, it would require that it would have to transform itself into an open tyranny. That is, the only way you could maintain British rule in India was through administrative massacres. They already had enough of them. They were now going to have to contemplate more. The British, I believe, wisely decided to get rid of their empire in order to keep their democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe it's something we ought to be talking about in this country.
And prior to the ascendance of the Bush administration and the blueprint provided by PNAC, the Project for a New American Century,
right.
Do you believe the U.S. was kind of on a balanced footing, and if the empire were to decline, it would have been a soft landing, as opposed to these efforts which have bankrupted our treasury, exposed us on many fronts, undermined our credibility, and
right.
left us with very little going forward except capitalism?
One of the things I would want to say is that the roots of the dilemma we face today are considerably older. They go back at least to the warning that Eisenhower made in 1961 against the military-industrial complex
mm-hmm.
and the financing of our economy essentially through weapons manufacturing. The thing that I would say about the 1990s, following the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, is that we made a disastrous and rather a nemesis-like, that is, she was the goddess of vengeance against hubris, wild ambition, and lack of information. We concluded we were the lone superpower. I don't believe that's the case. I believe that both the U.S. and the USSR lost the Cold War through excessive imperial overstretch, ideological rigidity, failure to reform. But we were always richer than they were. They went first. We concluded from this that we were a new Rome, that we could do anything we wanted to, that we were that we could rule the world through military means entirely. Wolfowitz, at the end of the first Bush administration, wrote a paper saying that our policy should be to prevent any combination that could ever seemingly challenge us at all militarily. He was, of course, in the position to implement it after the notorious Bush-Cheney-Rumsfeld group took over government. But I believe in a sense, as I wrote in Sorrows of Empire, if you really are an American materialist, imperialist, you're going to like Bill Clinton more than George Bush.
Hmm.
Clinton was much more subtle. Even though we exercised hegemony over the rest of the world, he disguised it under allegedly reacting to technological and ineluctable forces like globalization and things of this sort. Whereas Bush has just been arrogant and thoughtless. He's dropped the mask, has committed himself to preventive war, to the belief that our military power was untouchable, whereas, of course, as a result of his policies, we see that we have an army of 140,000 troops in Iraq, a country with a GNP about the size of Louisiana, and they've been stopped cold by 20,000 insurgents.
Mm-hmm.
We know why. The same thing would be happening if a similar invasion had occurred in the United States. I'm sure that Iraqi men my age, I'm 75 years old and a retired professor, but Iraqi men my age would be calling in their sons and saying, for the sake of our national identity and our self-respect, son, your mother and I have talked it over. We want you to go out and kill an American. If you get killed, we've decided to accept it.
Professor, we're going to take a break and continue. Chalmers Johnson is our guest. The new book is called Nemesis, The Last Days of the American Republic. If you'd like to talk with us, call now, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. The professor is with us this entire hour, and we're going to do what we can to cover the fascinating information that he presents in his book about the decline of the American Empire and where things are headed. 888-5-PETER-B, if you'd like to join us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
I am Attorney Sean Mills. Sometimes life does not take the direction that you plan. If you find yourself in need of an honest attorney, call me. I can advise you on both criminal and civil matters. Do not settle for an attorney who simply went to college and law school, when you can work with an attorney with significant life experience who uses a common sense approach to everyday legal problems. If you think you need an attorney, I will be glad to offer you a no-obligation consultation and evaluation of your legal issue with no sugarcoating. If you think you have a potential legal issue, it is important that you speak to a qualified attorney as soon as possible. Call me at 831-648-7060. That's 831-648-7060. I am Attorney Sean Mills.
One Day Income Tax Service, family owned and operated since 1944, specializes in year-round professional tax preparation. Do you want your refund quickly? Stop by One Day Income Tax Service. They offer tax preparation at reasonable rates and work to meet the needs of military families with the capacity to process all out-of-state returns. If you prefer to prepare your own return at home, they can help you expedite your refund by filing your return electronically. Let One Day Income Tax Service assist you with your return and maximize your refund. Stop by 885 Broadway Avenue in Seaside, where no appointment is necessary. Looking for quick, professional, and reasonable tax return preparation? Visit One Day Income Tax Service, 885 Broadway Avenue, Seaside, or call 394-8010. That's 831-394-8010. One Day Income Tax Service, where you walk in with a copy of your most recent tax return, personal ID, and W-2 1099 info for 2006, and you walk out with your completed tax return.
Children's books, educational toys, and games your entire family will enjoy together are always in season at locally owned and operated Thinker Toys. Hi, this is Nurse Rona of Childhood Matters. Research and common sense show that children learn by playing, and the caring management and staff at Thinker Toys have 37 years of experience helping parents and grandparents choose the ideal gift for toddlers through teens. So whether you're birthday shopping or simply want to show your love, a gift from Thinker Toys is a way to let someone know you care enough to shop for the very best. With an outstanding selection of Thomas the Tank engines and tracks, puzzles, board games, and children's books, all very reasonably priced, you can't go wrong with a gift from Thinker Toys. So stop by the beautiful Carmel store at 7th and San Carlos, or the just renovated Del Monte Center in Monterey. Thinker Toys is open daily.
Good afternoon. Let's check your drive in and around the Monterey Bay Area. It's brought to us this time around by your genuine Toyota service departments. Through March, a visit to your local participating Toyota service center could win you two tickets to the Toyota Save Mart 350. No purchase necessary. See dealer for official rules. Well, on the highways, we call this a getaway Friday since it's the beginning of a three-day weekend. So that means more traffic earlier on the highways and, unfortunately, more problems. Marina, we've got a problem. Highway 1, southbound side at 1st Avenue. hammer and other tools in the right-hand lane that could do damage to your vehicle, so stay to the left. Also in Marina, Highway 1 on the northbound side at 12th Street, rolled up carpet, and that's in the two right lanes. In Carmel, Carmel Way at Highway 17 Mile Drive, a stalled pickup truck in one of the lanes of traffic. And in Hollister, watch for a wreck. Eastbound 156 at San Felipe Road. Looks like that's blocking the eastbound lane there. I'm Alex Daly with traffic on
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 23 minutes after the hour. We're visiting with retired professor Chalmers Johnson. His new book is called Nemesis, subtitled The Last Days of the American Republic, out in hardcover from Metropolitan Books. And, Professor, I learned a couple of new interesting things from your book, and I wanted to start off with one, which is the idea of the presidential finding.
Yeah.
You explain in the book that this originates from efforts to clean up the operations of the intelligence community in the early to mid-1970s. Most people know about the Church Commission, but this originated from the Hughes-Ryan Act of 1974. Tell us.
Well, that is to say, until the 1970s and after Watergate, there was no oversight whatsoever on the CIA except for the president. This is why I argue in my study that it is, in fact, became a private army of the president. No president since Truman ever told that he has this power without any form of supervision or oversight, as no president has ever failed to use it. The CIA was, of course, set up to prevent surprise attack, to coordinate intelligence in such a way that it was usable to the president in light of what had happened at Pearl Harbor. In the National Security Act of 1947, there are four various functions that amount up to the collection of information through open sources and espionage and signals intelligence and things of this sort. There's a fifth general category of functions of the CIA, and it's anything else the National Security Council might assign.
Mm-hmm.
That turned out to be the root of social mobility within the CIA, that very quickly clandestine activities, assassinations of foreign leaders, overthrow of governments a president didn't like, the teaching of state terrorism to Latin American military leaders, the things that you mentioned at the top of the show, these things became the way you got promoted in the CIA. Intelligence analysis became less and less valuable until we got down to 2002 with the National Intelligence Estimate, in which not a single word in it, on the one on Iraq,
mm-hmm.
not a single word in it was accurate. It had all been made up. After the scandals of the Nixon administration, the various committees then began to try, and particularly the Church Committee, of course, to bring this under control. It's never worked very well. But one of the things they wrote into the law was that in the future, in order to conduct clandestine activities, by which I mean things like the overthrow of Salvador Allende in
mm-hmm.
Chile and bringing to power probably the most odious dictator during the entire Cold War period on either side, General Augusto Pinochet.
Mm-hmm.
In order to do that, the president now had, before he could just say, go ahead and do it, now he had to sign a piece of paper that said that he found, that's the verb, that he found that this activity was indispensable to the national security of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
It's from that term in the law that we get the term finding, meaning a piece of paper signed by the president putting a clandestine activity into operation.
And, Professor, I also learned the origin of the earmark, and we'll save that for a succeeding segment here. Dave, join us here. You're from Eureka, and you're on with Professor Chalmers Johnson.
Thank you, Peter. And Professor Johnson, I believe I'm listening to a realist. You are one who looks clearly at the evidence and you call it like you see it. And
I hope so.
Most commendable. I'm going to guess, I haven't heard it yet, though, the neocons that have invaded the Middle East and occupy it, this is, to some, a small special interest group of no-bid contractors and those who are behind them. This is a very profitable, very lucrative venture. And do you suspect that that plays a small part in what's driving the ship.
Let me say I agree with you, but I do think it is a relatively small part. I mean, we could come back to that, and it's a matter of judgment what's small. The intervening variable, the driving mechanism in the relationship between domestic democracy and foreign imperialism is militarism. In order to maintain, and by militarism I mean a way of life, a way of making a living, a set of values, not defense of the country. No one objects to the idea that we should, like any other nation state, defend ourselves. But militarism is required by the democracy that decides to become an imperialist in order to acquire the empire, to expand it, to police it. You must understand imperialism is a pure form of tyranny. It does not seek the consent of the governed. It does not seek the consent of the people on the receiving end, as the several thousand people killed in Iraq would their death testify. The militarism is precisely what our first president, George Washington, warned us against in his famous farewell address, in which he spoke of the greatest enemy of republican liberty was standing armies. The standing armies would move wealth, power, and influence into the executive branch.
Professor, I'm sorry, I got to jump in and take a break here. We'll pick up there as we continue with Chalmers Johnson. Okay. The new book is called Nemesis, The Last Days of the American Republic. Our number is 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
It's tax time again. And there's one progressive tax preparer in the Monterey Bay Area who specializes in tax returns for W-2 and self-employed working people. Jim Moore Income Tax specializes in preparing tax returns that maximize your refund as soon as you need it. In 24 hours, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, the choice is yours. The personnel at Jim Moore Income Tax have been helping the hardworking Spanish-speaking residents of the Central Coast with immigration and tax preparation services for more than 30 years. You can get your tax return professionally prepared and electronically filed by bilingual tax professionals at a very reasonable fee. Need your tax return tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today, located at 30 Alexander Street in downtown Watsonville, just two blocks from the Central Plaza. Be sure to take a copy of your 2005 federal and California returns and W-2 1099 info for 2006. Need your tax refund tomorrow? Visit the office of Jim Moore Income Tax today at 30 Alexander Street, downtown Watsonville.
Who defines what it means to support the troops? This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. Representative John Murtha came up with a clever idea. Instead of cutting off money for the war outright, impose some new rules. Require that the troops serving in Iraq get at least a year with their families between deployments, and require that no soldier be sent back without the proper armor. Murtha wouldn't even have to mention trying to cut off the troop surge. He could just talk about finally giving the soldiers the recovery time and the battle protection they deserve. And he certainly wouldn't have to reveal the underlying strategy, like, say, in an interview with MoveOn.org.
If they can't extend people, if they can't send people back that don't have equipment and so forth, they can't continue to surge is what it amounts to.
I guess we're past subtlety. And that interview gave the chair of the Republican National Committee all he needed to fire off a letter calling this the Democrats' slow bleed plan, claiming the purpose is to make it harder for the troops to do their jobs. And so the tussle for control of the language continues. So, if this is a slow bleed plan, then opponents prefer a fast bleed plan? Actually, most Americans appear to prefer a no bleed plan, especially when the current plan, whatever you call it, has had almost 4 years to work. Which brings us to another phrase that gets tossed around a lot. Supporting the troops. Can you say you're supporting the troops if you support sending more of them into a civil war, and then vote against giving them the right armor and time to rest? Well, as we learned in a previous administration, maybe it depends on what the definition of rest is, and armor, and support. Now this.
Computer security threats such as spam, spyware, viruses, and pop-up ads invade your business every day through email, web browsing, and instant messaging.
And the fastest way to stop them is with Barracuda Network's spam firewalls and web filters.
Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now
and ask for your free trial.
Barracuda Network's firewalls are affordable and easy to use. That's why over 35,000 leading companies are using the award-winning firewall. Try a Barracuda firewall for free. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go online to barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Pour me another tequila, Sheila.
Here's what people are saying about the hottest new show in town.
Joe, thank you so much for being here.
I want to wish you the best of luck with this. I think it's a great service.
Hey, drink up, all you people.
12-Step Talk Uncensored, where we take the shame and blame out of addiction. Join me, Sheila Gale, Saturday afternoons, 4 to 5. 12-Step Talk Uncensored. It's about time.
This is Frank Don. On Sunday evenings at 7 p.m. here on KRXA 540 a.m., join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour, a live call-in program to discuss astrology, the astrology of the world, and your own personal astrology. Let me answer your questions, and let me teach you how astrology can help you make better life choices. Here on KRXA 540 a.m. from 7 to 8 every Sunday evening, join me for Frank Don's Astrology Hour.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Retired Professor Chalmers Johnson is our guest. I'm having a little trouble with Chalmers. It twists my tongue. The book is called Nemesis, The Last Days of the American Republic. And, Professor, before the break came that I couldn't stop, you were talking about the role of militarism in the adventures of the Bush administration.
Let me just pick that up.
Mm-hmm.
The structure that the founders of our country built in to protect us from dictatorship, from tyranny, was called a republic, by which we mean separation of powers, balance of power, checks and balances, the ensuring that no single person ever achieves unchallenged power. We do that through separate our government into states and the federal government, the separation of powers between the electoral, between the judicial, legislative, and executive power.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with militarism is that it breaks up this balance, as George Washington warned us against, in favor of power in Washington, D.C., of money flowing to the military, flowing into the presidency, ultimately eclipsing the other two branches, the legislative and judicial branches. That's what Dwight Eisenhower warned us about in his famous and strident farewell address of 1961, in which he said that something truly unprecedented had happened in this country, namely the rise of what he called the military-industrial complex, with power that was virtually unchecked by the Congress. It's now gone much, much further. Bush and Cheney have openly said that their job, their purpose, was to expand executive power.
Mm-hmm.
The Congress has virtually totally failed in its functions to balance this, to try to do oversight. Just last week, George Bush submitted to Congress a so-called defense budget that is larger than all other defense budgets on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Part of this is what I call in Nemesis military Keynesianism, meaning our increasing dependence in this country on military contracts for products that aren't any good. They don't work. We know they don't work. Nobody cares if they don't work, like this outer space stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It is to provide jobs for people. That one, it's penetrated our society very deeply. We see it every time there's a the Secretary of Defense calls for the closing of no longer needed military bases. Every community around the base goes crazy. Preachers, journalists, politicians, save our base.
Mm-hmm.
The two mother hens of the Defense Facilities Subcommittee of the Senate Armed Services Committee are easily Kay Bailey Hutchinson of Texas and Dianne Feinstein of California,
mm-hmm.
the two states with the largest number of military bases, and these two ladies will do everything in their power to keep them open and functioning. That's military Keynesianism. It's very dangerous because we're not paying for it. We're putting it on the tab. We're being financed by China and Japan, who transfer somewhere in the neighborhood of $6 billion a day to us to maintain our tastes.
Mm-hmm.
We don't manufacture much in this country anymore. Our auto industry is well on its way toward the cemetery where American consumer electronics is buried.
And steel?
And steel, and mm-hmm. numerous other cases. One of the things we do still manufacture are weapons. We are easily the world's greatest munitions maker.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of thing that that I'm warning against. I don't see how any president of either party could today actually restrain the vested interests around the military establishment, around the Pentagon. 40% of the defense budget is black. Nobody gets to see it. You can't do oversight on it if you can't get the information.
Mm-hmm.
And that's congressmen we're talking about now, or congresswomen.
And Professor, let me jump in here, because that's exactly where I wanted to go, is into the black budgets and the origin of earmarks. You explain it in the book, starting with a description of Charlie Wilson, a congressman from Texas.
Well, Charlie Wilson, I live in the 50th District of California. Some of you will recognize that is the home of Randy Doug Cunningham.
Well, and we also watched as the election was stolen from...
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's something that is... One gets, it's why you don't... I don't come up with an optimistic subtitle.
Yeah.
But Randy Duke was a successor to Charlie Wilson. Charlie Wilson was like Cunningham in the 1980s. He's from the Texas 2nd District, very famous old Bible Belt district. He became a member of the Appropriations Committee in the House, and then of the Intelligence Committee, in which he used his position there entirely to begin to earmark weapons, funds, things that had not been requested by the CIA, but to support our largest ever clandestine operation. That was the recruiting, arming, sending into battle of the Mujahideen against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Once he became head of the Intelligence Committee, he very famously sent a message to his cronies at the CIA and said, the fox is in the hen house. Do anything you want to.
Well, and this week we had the indictment of Dusty Fogo and Brent Wilkes.
Exactly.
More fallout, or is it blowback from
it
the,
continues to go on,
the Cunningham
right,
case?
It's partly blowback, too, and it's... But it's appalling. That is, you'd have thought we'd have learned something, but instead what we've done here in northern San Diego County is we've fired one of the smartest U.S. attorneys around, Carol Lamb.
Who, well, wait a minute. You didn't fire him.
I didn't fire him. I think
Al Gonzalez did.
Yeah, the flunky courtier from Texas that our president has actually seen fit to name Attorney General of the United States. And then after Cunningham went to prison for 8.5 years, we went ahead to elect Brian Bilbray, a lobbyist of really even worse repute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
but those are earmarks. That's what the way this was done is that these people who working in secret committees are able to attach, it's what their staffs do, mm-hmm. to attach huge amounts of money to the, that is, in billions of dollars,
right.
to the budgets that are never scrutinized by any committee of Congress. In some cases, never even voted on, only done in conference.
And one of the elements of the indictment against Dusty Fogo is that in collusion with Wilkes, he conspired to mark up the price of bottled water for troops deployed in the Middle East.
Well, that's, of course, the terribly cynical thing about this. Cunningham loved to call himself an ace from the Vietnam War and was a general macho pilot type, but that these guys were quite prepared to corrupt the supplies of the armed forces by supplying weapons that they didn't ask for, might not have worked.
Mm-hmm.
The first use of the Stinger shoulder-fired missile that we ever had was after Wilson gave that to the Mujahideen in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
It all came back to haunt us. Osama bin Laden was an ally of ours at that time, but once the Soviet Union withdrew from Afghanistan in 1988, the first George Bush lost all interest in the case. The Afghans considered themselves betrayed. This is blowback, real blowback.
Mm-hmm.
And they set out to get even.
They've been doing it
for a long time.
Let's take a phone call here, Professor, before she gets really annoyed from holding too long. Angelina in Seaside, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with Professor Chalmers Johnson.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I would like to ask you, what is the role of the State of Israel, and what are the dangers and or any advantages, please?
In the current situation
mm-hmm.
okay.
which you are discussing.
All right, Professor?
It's an extremely controversial issue, as you know. That is to say, the United States has, since the creation of Israel in the immediate post-war period, been an ally of the Israelis and have tried to defend them against threats of extinction. We have tried, however, to be extremely even-handed about this, that is to reconcile the people that were displaced by the creation of Israel, displaced in a very vigorous ethnic cleansing way, and to reconcile these groups to cause them to live together. Certainly, the last president, Bill Clinton, was courageous and active in this area. No question about the most active was Jimmy Carter and his Camp David Accords in the late 1970s. The issue today is precisely that Israel is a very rich, extremely powerful nuclear power with contempt for the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, which is not content to accept the guarantees from the United States that we would ensure that the threats of extermination would never be carried out. It is instead under the cover of the United States continuing to expand into what territories the Palestinians have left. This is a source of unimaginable resentment throughout the Islamic world, that is from Morocco to Indonesia, and the United States is seen as hypocritical, betraying these people and serving the interests of what is increasingly called an Israeli lobby. That is part of the situation in that the neoconservatives who have dominated foreign policy and military policy making in this administration have all been outspoken proponents of expanding Israeli influence.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Angelina, thank you for that question, and thanks for holding on today. I appreciate that. We'll take more calls in the next segment here on the Peter B. Collins Show, 888-5-PETER-B, if you'd like to talk with Professor Johnson. I wanted to turn next, and Professor, sure. I'm jumping around your book. There's so much in it, we can't fit it all in an hour. But I wanted to turn to the loss of civil liberties
yes.
here in the United States, the rollback in democracy, small d democracy, that we have endured under this administration, and how it ties into your sense of the declining empire. I'm very offended by the torture policy and the way the Bush administration intimidated the Congress into passing this misguided Military Commissions Act. I call it the Stalin Detention, yeah. Torture, and Kangaroo Court Act of 2006. And when you tie that together with the obvious law-breaking of the NSA surveillance program right. domestically, and then you look at the complicity of the Congress, and this is a really scary combination of factors.
Well, there's numerous things going on here. I mean, the president actually comes out and calls himself. He says, I am the decider, and he says this repeatedly. He isn't the decider according to constitutional law. It's a combination of people who make decisions in this country, not any single monarch. This is an attempt to usurp power. The Patriot Act itself, which is where this began, was enacted hardly a month after 9/11. The act is over 1,000 pages long. I guarantee you it wasn't written in that month.
And it wasn't read by the people who passed it.
Of course. The neocons simply went back to the Department of Justice and hit print on their computers and produced what they had wanted. That is to say, if the neoconservatives exploited 9/11 in order to attack a country that was, after all, secular as distinct from theological, and had not attacked us in any way at all. In fact, it had formerly been an ally of ours, namely Iraq, that in this, they also exploited 9/11 in order to vastly expand their own powers, the power, and that this is where we see the unbalancing, the breaking down of the balance of power on which our country rests. I guarantee you, without the Republican form of government, the Bill of Rights is simply a piece of paper with some printing on it. Yet the president it's out of control, and he has appointed people to offices and done things that are simply unimaginable, such as the endorsement of torture. We've had his legal advisor and now attorney general tell us that the Geneva Conventions on the treatment of prisoners of war are no longer applicable.
They're quaint.
That's not in Mr. Gonzalez's power. It's not in the Attorney General's power.
Well, and look at the way the way recently Gonzalez tried to find wiggle room in the Constitution's address of habeas corpus.
Oh,
it only talks about exemptions or exceptions to habeas corpus, which states clearly that that is our policy, and it goes back to 1215.
And don't start thinking that we're going to be saved by our political system. I mean, we have in our Constitution a structure for getting rid of political leaders that do things of this sort, unsatisfactory political leaders that are clearly leading us in the wrong direction, and it's called impeachment. Well, we elect the Democratic Party to take over Congress, and they say on their first day in power, impeachment is off the table. Well, if impeachment is off the table, the Republic may well be off the table, too.
Mm-hmm. I got to take a break, Professor, and I'll just mention that across the table from me, I have what's called the Disappearing Civil Liberties mug. And when you put it in the microwave and heat it up, the Bill of Rights that's printed on it disappears. We'll take a break and continue right after that with Chalmers Johnson. The new book is called Nemesis, subtitled The Last Days of the American Republic. I recommend it to you. More in a moment here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
This week on Rock Roller Real Estate, our good friend Jim Ross will be on. Jim will be talking about the free seminar on Tuesday, February 20th at 6 p.m. at the Westin Hotel at the San Francisco Airport in Millbrae. Hear how you can buy undervalued pre-construction real estate in the hottest areas of the United States. For more information on this event, call 916-941-9977. That's 916-941-9977. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Attention all KRXA listeners. Are you worried about not having enough money for a truly comfortable retirement? Were you aware that you have the ability to buy real estate within your individual retirement account without government penalty since 1974? Bet you didn't know that. Only 2% of the U.S. population is even aware of the law. If your IRA had been invested in California real estate 20 years ago, you'd be a multimillionaire today. The retirement specialist will show you how to purchase California property right inside your IRA. They've helped nearly 10,000 people in the last four decades achieve their retirement goals by rolling over their IRAs and 401ks into profitable California real estate. Give them a call at 831-794-8485 to learn more about this underutilized retirement investment. That's 831-794-8485. If you want to achieve financial independence by the time you retire, then call now. There's nothing to lose, only valuable knowledge to gain. Call 831-794-8485 and ask for the retirement specialist.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, well, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Let's check your drive home in and around the Monterey Bay area. It's brought to us again by your genuine Toyota service departments through March. A visit to your local participating Toyota service center could win you two tickets to the Toyota Save Mart 350. No purchase necessary. See dealer for official rules. On these highways, let's go to the Santa Cruz Mountains. A little problem. Southbound side of Highway 17 before the summit. A stalled bus blocking the right-hand lane, so slow traffic. Meanwhile, in Live Oak, Paul Mini Avenue at Rodriguez Street. An injury crash here. An SUV hit a parked car. CHP is going to head out and help with that. In Salinas, Highway 183 at Espinosa Road, stalled here. It's a stalled pickup truck, and it is partially blocking the roadway. Also southbound Highway 1, it's slow as per usual. Monterey to Carmel. Eastbound side of Highway 25 is pretty heavy from Gilroy on out to Hollister. I'm Alex Daly with traffic on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. My guest is the author of a powerful new book. We've just scratched the surface. It's called Nemesis, The Last Days of the American Republic. Professor Emeritus from UC San Diego, Chalmers Johnson, the author and our guest. And in the book, Professor, you make a number of disclosures about yourself. I'll only share one right now, which is that you're a plane spotter.
Yes, that's true.
And I find that fascinating because 6 months ago, we interviewed two young reporters who published a book called Torture Taxi.
Yes.
And they were able to track, as you recount in the book, the travels of a small fleet of American-owned jets and other aircraft that have been used to transfer detainees and those who've just been snatched off the street. Just today, in Italy, they returned indictments against 25 individuals, including CIA officers, for snatching an Egyptian and sending him to Egypt, where he was tortured.
Both the CIA station chiefs in Milan and Rome were indicted.
Mm-hmm. And if you could, just in a minute or two, tell us the significance of this, and also the fact that, as you report in the book, the Clinton administration made pretty significant use of extraordinary rendition.
Well, extraordinary—the word extraordinary comes up here because rendition actually refers to seeking a fugitive abroad, capturing him and bringing him back to the United States to stand trial for a crime committed here. This goes back to our chasing down some airplane hijackers back in the 1970s and 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But extraordinary rendition seems—this is simply a display of the worst kind of Roman power. It means picking up people without any real evidence. I've just done a long review of the latest London Review of Books of the book by Stephen Gray called Ghost Plane,
mm-hmm.
which is right now probably the most detailed account we have of these efforts by the CIA. It means people picking up people off of European streets, mm-hmm. putting them on commercial airplanes, flying them to Syria or Uzbekistan or, above all, Egypt,
mm-hmm.
where they are tortured. Often they do not survive this. What's the purpose of it? It hasn't done any good at all yet in any case that we can document. It seems to be nothing more than a kind of mean demonstration that we can do it.
And in the book, Professor, you once again provide context not available to Americans from our media. On August 5th, 98, the International Islamic Front for Jihad promised a reprisal for recent U.S. renditions from Albania, and 2 days later, Al-Qaeda blew up the embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. The renditions continued, with the CIA and FBI carrying out some two dozen of them in 99 and 2000. These, in turn, helped provoke the attacks on the USS Cole in October of 2000. We don't make those connections.
Well, we've got part of the problem is the public isn't able to play the citizen role that Benjamin Franklin, for example, envisaged. That is, the citizens are supposed to do at least elementary oversight on their government. That means they've got to be vaguely well-informed. When you look at the evening television network news, you realize that this is in the hands of corporations that are simply interested in advertising revenue. We see that Murdoch is contemplating buying a third of the Los Angeles Times. You have to work at it to be well-informed in our society.
Mm-hmm.
It's better than it was 4 years ago. No doubt people are learning to use the Internet and things of that sort, but that's why I really do mean my subtitle. I don't see that you can mobilize enough people in a country this large and this diverse in time to stop the inexorable movement toward breaking our Republican system.
Yeah. John in Carmel Valley, thanks for holding on. You're on the air.
The founding fathers made a mistake, I think, by allowing some exceptions to habeas corpus. I think it should read the exact opposite, that in times of rebellion, especially, there shall be no abridgment to habeas corpus, because it's in those heated, hot-headed times that you most need it. But I want to ask the professor.
Well, let me just say, well said. I mean, it shouldn't have been done even in the Civil War, even though you could make a case that when they're actually fighting within virtually eyesight of Washington, D.C., and you can't tell the enemy from your own side, that maybe something extraordinary measures are needed, but it certainly would have been better if it had never been done at all.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, John.
Well, I heard you, Professor, on Tom Ashbrook's On Point program.
Mm.
Enjoyed that. And I wanted to ask you, I am perennially, and no one has helped me that much to get over this, fixated on the enigma of Tony Blair.
Yes.
I can't figure him out, because during the awful war against Lebanon this past July, he said publicly that it was a catastrophe. And clearly he had pangs of conscience about all that bloodshed and all that wanton destruction. But in the end, he did his unending role of giving in to Bush and going much further than that. How do you explain him?
Well, briefly, it goes back to our revolutionary origins. The British have a small cottage industry of explaining to the rest of the world that their empire was a good empire, that it was a lot of fun, that they ran it well. You'd never know that India for a century had nothing but the greatest famines on earth and didn't increase one single pound sterling worth of national income. This goes on today. People just completely indifferent to say how Australia was settled, or to the racist war in the 1950s against the Kikuyu in Kenya. There are atavisms. There are some Englishmen who clearly enjoyed imperialism and want to go back to it. It is one of the tragedies of our time that the British, as well as the Australians, could so easily have avoided what they did, that is joining Bush in this. They could have continued to offer English-speaking influence on the development of the continent of Europe, but they simply discredited themselves. And there's nothing else you can do but say it's an atavism.
I've got to stop there. I thank you for a great question, John, and I appreciate you listening. Professor, can we talk again? There's a lot more I'd like to discuss with you.
Well, that's very kind of you. You do have a very good program. So of course, I'd be glad to have you call me back.
We've got your number. We'll be in touch. Thank you very much.
Thank you indeed for inviting me.
Chalmers Johnson. You got to read this book, Nemesis, The Last Days of the American Republic, in hardcover from Metropolitan Books. Thanks for listening to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. It's archived at peterbcollins.com. Coming up next, Brad Friedman, protecting your vote, including in District 50 in Southern California. That's ahead here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
In these United States, you have many rights. You have the right to assemble. You have the right to free speech. You have the right to worship as you choose. And when you disagree with Billy Sunshine, you have the right to be wrong.
The Billy Sunshine Show, right here on KRXA 540 AM. Tune in Sundays 3 to 5.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The vote was 246 to 182, 17 Republicans joining all but two Democrats in support of a non-binding resolution that puts the House on record opposing the troop surge in Iraq. California Democrat Tom Lantos said American troops should be surging out of Iraq.
De-escalation is not only good for the United States of America, de-escalation is good for Iraq, because unless we de-escalate, the Iraqis will never step up to the plate.
But House Republican leader John Boehner had a different spin on de-escalation.
The American people will not support a strategy that involves pulling the rug out from under American troops in the combat zone by cutting off their reinforcements and forcing them to face an enemy without our full support.
In the Senate, Majority Leader Harry Reid is scheduled a test vote on an Iraq war resolution tomorrow, forcing several presidential hopefuls to change their travel plans. Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell takes responsibility for the state's response to Wednesday's storm, which left hundreds of travelers stranded on major roads.
There were significant mistakes in judgment made and significant breakdown, almost a total breakdown in communications between state agencies.
He says it's totally unacceptable. Crews are still trying to clear the thick ice from sections of Interstate 78, 80, and 81. JetBlue is still in recovery mode again today. Passengers faced flight cancellations and long delays. At New York's Kennedy Airport, Gabriel Aiello was trying to get to a weekend wedding in Tampa.
15
disorganized. The best way to describe it is hell.
Effective today, State Farm says it's not writing any new homeowners or commercial policies in Mississippi. State Attorney General Jim Hood says he'll seek legislation to reverse that. Despite claims after Hurricane Katrina, he says State Farm isn't hurting.
We're seeing a corporation that has made $3.9 billion in the most catastrophic year in history. They have $50 billion in reserves. They never touched their reserves to pay off these claims.
State Farm objects to Hood calling it a robber baron and says the decision is a reaction to the legal and political challenges it faces in Mississippi. Two moles were removed from President Bush's left temple in a brief procedure this afternoon. The White House says doctors do not think they're malignant. CBS News correspondent Peter King reports a jury in Bradenton, Florida, has sentenced a driver to 25 years in prison for an angry outburst behind the wheel.
Prosecutors said Eric Payton shot at a pest control truck during a road rage dispute. The truck driver tried to escape, but he ran a red light and slammed into a car, killing one passenger, critically injuring another, and the driver. Payton's attorney maintained that he didn't shoot at the truck and was holding a cell phone, not a gun. The men in the truck said they saw and heard Payton fire at them, and another witness said she heard the gunshots.
The Dow up 2 points today. This is CBS News.
Ever wonder when buying a used car if you're just buying a used problem? Not if it's a Honda certified used car. They're well-maintained late model Hondas. Each undergoes a 150-point inspection, then backed by a 7-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty from the original in-service date and a 12-month, 12,000-mile limited non-powertrain warranty. And now get low APR financing on all certified used Honda Odyssey and Pilot models. It may be used, but it's still a Honda.
See dealer for financing and limited warranty details.
It was like we were flying.
We could see homes, a school, restaurants.
We could see parks and shops.
And you know what?
We never left our living room.
At ColdwellBanker.com, advanced maps give you an aerial view of homes as well as the surrounding neighborhood. See for yourself.
I always wanted to take up flying.
Now you don't have to. Get the whole picture at ColdwellBanker.com. Coldwell Banker, your perfect partner. Each office is independently owned and operated.
It's not exactly a log cabin, but the boyhood home of Walter Mondale is for sale. WCCO Radio's Steve Murphy has the story.
The future vice president lived in the 19th century parsonage in tiny Elmore, Minnesota, back in the late 1930s and 40s. The current owners bought the home in 2003 for $15,000, spent the next 3 years fixing it up, and placed it on eBay with an opening bid of $50,000. Mondale wishes them well.
They called me and said they were going to do it. It's a lovely little home, and I hope it sells.
Mondale never lost his attachment for the house, even launching his 1984 presidential campaign from the back porch. Steve Murphy, CBS News, Minneapolis.
The winner of a $74.5 million Powerball lottery jackpot came forward today in Raleigh, North Carolina. Jackie Alston is a 38-year-old single mother who, until recently, worked as a state prison guard. She picked up her check and left the news conference in a stretch limo. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Did you know your Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury may be trying to tell you something? Just look at your oil change sticker or your odometer. They tell an important message, when to change your oil. And when it is time, be sure to visit your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer.
I can help. I got two strong arms. I can help.
Right now, the Works Fuel Saver Package is just $36.95 or less. That's a Motorcraft synthetic blend oil change, tire rotation, fluid top off, multi-point inspection, and more. Just $36.95. And no appointment is necessary. Now that's convenient. Genuine Ford parts, expert service, low prices. We've got everything you need.
You need a hand, I can assure you this, I can help.
Genuine Ford and Lincoln Mercury parts and service. We're better. We're proving it. And we want you to be the judge. Hurry into your Ford or Lincoln Mercury dealer today. Up to 5 quarts oil, taxes, and diesel vehicles extra. Disposal fee may apply. See participating dealership for service hours and details through 31807.
Let's do it.
We got Brad?
Yeah, we got Brad. Let's do it. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Every Friday in our third and final hour, we take a look at voter integrity issues, election fraud, and those pesky electronic voting machines. Our go-to guy is the proprietor of BradBlog.com, Brad Friedman. Welcome back to the show, Brad.
Thanks, Peter. Good to be here. Talking to you from the Bradmobile.
somewhere in a parking lot in Riverside County, Jeff Stone country.
You trying to collect on that bet?
Yeah, that 1,000 to 1. Not going to be easy, but I'm working on it.
Yeah. Well, Brad, I want to thank you for your devotion to this program and your willingness to sit in a parking lot in Riverside in order to get better cell coverage for the show. We appreciate that.
I can think of no place I would rather be.
Well, you're too generous. Well, let's see. There are a lot of things to talk about. I think we'll probably drop Jeff Gannon's name this hour. We might get around to another slime of Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh. But I want to start off with the real news in the election integrity field, which is that many of us are deeply dissatisfied with the efforts in the House and Senate to fix the problems. And in particular, the bill sponsored by Congressman Rush Holt has a lot of problems. Give us a quick rundown on what those issues are and whether you think we can get it fixed.
Yeah, it does have a lot of problems, and I've been promising for a week or two. It actually dropped since I've been out here on the road, which has made it very difficult to cover it as fully as I'd like over Brad Blog, but hopefully this week I'll have a full analysis of it from my point of view, and I'll go ahead and give you a full disclosure here right off the bat. I was in on the drafting of that bill for the last several months. I was given draft copies of it and was able to improve quite a bit of the language and get some much needed provisions into that bill. For example, there will be no more sleepovers. Those will be illegal, the voting machine sleepovers, and a bunch of other stuff. So there is a lot of good stuff in there. However, some of the big points where we've got these paper ballots. Well, we finally got language that says there shall be paper ballots. However, they're refusing, essentially, to include the fact that these paper ballots shall actually be tabulated. Right now, those paper ballots will be the ballot of record only in the case of audits and recounts. Now, there's a federal mandate for audits of those paper ballots. That's good. But on the night of election, if you're not tabulating the ballots, really the only reason can be that is because you want to use these DRE touchscreen machines that record the votes inside the machine. So you've got a paper ballot, perhaps, but you're not actually bothering to count it. That's really the huge deal breaker for me. There's another smaller deal breaker or two, but this is the big one, and I've been drilling down, trying to figure out why the hell they're not willing to, you know, step forward and do really what the Republican governor of Florida has recently done, and saying we're getting rid of the touchscreen machines, we're going to replace them with optical scan machines. So why they won't do that has been a bit of a mystery. I've been drilling down, trying to figure out what's going on here. And what's going on here seems to be, as you know, one of the bugaboos for a while with these touchscreen machines has been that the disabled community has been saying, oh, we need these disabled accessible voting machines. Well, never mind the fact that these DREs or touchscreens are not the only way that disabled voters can vote independently and privately. There are other ways, but it seems now to be coming down to the language minority people, civil rights people, concerned about folks who have English as a second language, and they are suggesting that for some reason, and I'm still don't know exactly where it comes from, but for some reason, they're saying that DRE touchscreen machines are better for language minority voters than our OpScan ballots, paper ballots, which is a bizarre argument to me because you can print out a paper ballot in any language you want. So the suggestion that it would be easier to vote on a touchscreen machine for people who don't speak English as their first language seems somewhat, I don't want to call it disingenuous because the people I've talked to actually, I think, actually believe this, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of evidence for this. So, oddly enough, the rest of the country may have to live with these touch machines because of what seems to be a rather unsupported notion that language minority folks will do better on touchscreen machines. And you've got a lot of, unfortunately, you've got a lot of the Democratic interest groups out there, like PFAW, People for the American Way, Common Cause, even Move On has now come out in support of the Holt bill, knowing that it does not ban the DRE touchscreen machines. That's very troubling. At the same time, an effort was taking place over on the Senate side to try to fix some of the problems with the Holt bill on the House side. So folks have been working with Dianne Feinstein's office to try to fix some of those things, and she sort of got short-circuited this week when, surprise, surprise, Bill Nelson, Senator, Democratic senator from Florida, dropped his own version of the Holt bill in the Senate, and it's essentially a clone bill. There's one thing has been removed, which is good. A problem with a big problem with the Holt bill was removed, but by and large, it stays intact in Bill Nelson's version. So, either a lack of communication on the Democratic side, also surprise, surprise, or you've got these Democrats, whether the Democratic legislators or their supporting interest groups, who are afraid to, you know, take that step and show that courage to say enough is enough. Touchscreen voting machines disenfranchise people, left, right, black, white, whatever. And it's time to get rid of them once and for all. For some reason, they're afraid to take that step. And, of course, it doesn't sound completely unusual when you're talking about Democrats, I'm afraid.
Well, a couple of reactions to this situation. One, this morning I was listening to the Tom Hartman show, and he does a weekly segment with Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont. And I love Bernie, but I was disappointed. This was not specific to the Holt bill, but a caller just asked him about the electronic voting machines. And Bernie pointed out that in two key elections this past year, he was referring to Virginia and Montana, where Webb and Tester came out narrow victors, that as if, you know, that this was a suggestion that the machines are okay. And I'm sorry, I don't agree with the senator's reasoning there. And let me tie that to this. This is a quote from an email I got just about an hour ago from Mark Crispin Miller, professor at NYU, who cares very much about these issues, as you know. He says, this cave-in and the current rush to pass Holt's bill, which will finally do more harm than good, make clear that the Democrats feel much assured by their big quote-unquote victory in November. They tell themselves that they gave Bush the thumpin' that he so quaintly mentioned in his first press conference after Election Day. They tell themselves that their big win of 29 House seats was a sort of proof that things can't really be so bad, or they would not have been permitted to perform so well. Well, hey, I argue that the Democrats overcame the margin of graft to narrowly win those Senate races, and there were a couple of upsets in the House, but I don't think that any of this gives us confidence that the machines worked okay in November of 06.
No, it certainly doesn't, and I am afraid that some of the Democrats have taken away the completely wrong lesson for this. Look, I don't think it's I don't think there's an insidious evil there on the part of those Democrats, as much as they just don't understand what is at stake here, and that we're heading into a presidential election. And, you know, they're under the impression still that paper trails versus paper ballots are good enough, and they don't understand the dangers there. Now, as I say, I don't necessarily blame all of those Congress members for not being informed. I do, however, blame some of these groups, like PFAW, like Move On, frankly, Vote Trust USA, who are not taking a tough enough public stance on this. And even, you know, I've seen from Common Cause, for example, and PFAW, this notion that paper trails, if we had only had them on those machines down there in Sarasota, where they're still trying to figure out what happened to 18,000 missing votes, that those paper trails would have saved the day. And these are from people who know the election integrity game here. They're completely out to lunch. Paper trails would not have saved us on those machines. If people failed to notice that a vote did not register on the computer screen when they had it in front of their face, the summary screen, what the hell makes these people think that they were going to notice it then on this paper trail that kicks out on the side of the machine and ultimately isn't even counted to start with? So you know, we've got a combination of misinformation, bad information, lack of courage. It's very disappointing in that, you know, people have finally identified the problem. We're no longer conspiracy theorists. They know we got a problem. They just have to figure out the right solution.
All right. We're going to take a break and then talk with Brad about ways that we can agitate, advocate, and get active to try to amend this bill and get it fixed in the right direction. If you have a question or comment for Brad, bring it on now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We'll continue in a moment right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens, he cares. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Let's check your drive home in and around the Monterey Bay Area. It's brought to us this time around by Charles Schwab. A good investment plan starts with a good relationship. Talk to a Schwab financial consultant today. Talk to Chuck. Charles Schwab. 1-800-4-SCHWAB. On the highways in Live Oak, still dealing with this crash. Palmini Avenue at Rodriguez Street. It's an injury wreck as his SUV unfortunately hit a parked car. CHP helping out on the scene. In Boulder Creek, Bear Creek Road at Huckleberry Lane, an accident here. A vehicle hit a power pole, so it's very serious. Power lines are down, they're live, they're in the roadway, so emergency crews are headed out to that scene. Slow traffic only remains for Friday afternoon. Heavy Highway 68, both sides between Monterey and Salinas. Eastbound, I'd say, is a little bit heavier at this point. I'm Alex Daly. That's traffic on KRXA 540.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, and I remain your humble host, Peter B. Coming up later this hour, Brad and I are going to give you a bit of a preview of the new Fox News Channel show called the Half Hour News Hour, and it's supposed to be a comedy show. I mean, they even trotted out Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter for their debut show, which premieres opposite 60 Minutes, which should be the kiss of death, although I guess the Fox News Channel people think 60 Minutes is a dangerous liberal show. Anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit later in the hour. Brad, I wanted to tag on to our first segment here and now talk about what you think we need to be doing to work first with our allies, like Common Cause and Move On, to educate them about the flaws in the Holt bill and how we can help them understand that a half-assed approach to fixing the problem will really only make it worse.
Well, that's it. I mean, what we're talking about here, you could potentially be institutionalizing these touchscreen machines for years to come. And, after 2006, after we saw how they just disenfranchised voters of all stripes, doesn't matter what your political leanings are, doesn't matter if you're left, Democrat, Republican, when those machines break down, you cannot vote. And this point that I don't understand why they don't get. So what can we do? Raise hell. Do exactly what MoveOn.org does and PFA and Common Cause. And, I hope somebody will begin to put together a petition to bury them with email saying, hey, guys, you're not getting this, and you need to stand up and fight for election integrity by insisting we get rid once and for all of these touchscreen voting machines.
Mm-hmm.
I think the feeling that they get, they all have said to me, by the way, when I've had private talks with all of these various groups, they all understand, they all say, well, we wouldn't mind if we got rid of them, but they feel that it's better to get this bill up as is and get something in time so that we can make a change by 2008. To me, that seems somewhat collectively disingenuous, in that if PFA and Common Cause and Move On all stood up and said, hey, Democrats, enough is enough, get rid of these machines, ban them now, I suspect you would see those Democrats doing exactly that, and in short order and in plenty of time to straighten this out by 2008. So, there's been a lot of let's call it backroom politicking going on and trying to figure out where all the positions are and where the various weak points are. I've been talking to a lot of folks trying to figure out what we can do and try to pull together a coalition to make something happen. For the short term, let me do this. Let me point folks to velvetrevolution.us, where we have a paper ballot campaign that you can, in 60 seconds, you can send an open letter to your congressman that we've already written with about 40 other election integrity groups demanding a paper ballot that is actually counted for every vote in America. So folks can do that now. Jump over to velvetrevolution.us, please. Make some noise there, and hopefully things are moving very, very quickly here. So hopefully by next Friday, I'll have even more action points for folks on this.
All right. And on my part, I'm going to Shelley Pingree, the head of Common Cause, resigned to move back to Maine and run for Congress. So Celia Wexler, I think, is one of the top people there who work on these issues. And I'll make a note to try to invite her on the program next week. And we can lobby right here live on the radio.
I would love to do that. You can also talk to Barbara Burt, who is in charge of this side of things,
mm-hmm.
and Susanna Goldman, Goodman. So those are the folks working on the election reform stuff at Common Cause. And if they're truly in favor of democracy, I like to believe they are, then hopefully they'll be willing to come on the air and talk about these points.
All right, we'll work on that. Now to Peter in Chicago. Thanks for your call, Peter. You're on with Peter B. and Brad.
Yeah, Brad, I really enjoy the way you describe a lot of these problems, and I have the same feelings that you have. I'm really getting a little concerned about I try to reply a lot of times, via email and through callings to senators and other officials, trying to get my, trying to sway their their ideas or get them to get off their feet and stop being so constantly worried about, how would you call it, we have to accommodate the other side of the aisle, otherwise we're not going to win the elections. And I was wondering if you could possibly talk a little bit more. I know you touched a little bit on some of the things we can do, but I'm starting to feel like call-ins and letters and things just don't work, and I'm starting to wonder, you know, what other alternatives there are besides trying to get somebody, you know, out demonstrating in the streets.
All right, Brad?
Well, yeah, we are going to have to. I think what you're referring to was best put by Russ Feingold when I had lunch with him about a year or so ago, and he talked about Democrats going into their foxholes on some of these points. I think that's a very apt description. They are in the foxholes. They are trying to play it safe, not stick their head, their neck out in the open. There is a limit to the effectiveness, I suppose, of these calls, these faxes, these emails, versus getting out into the street and then, hell, voting these people out. The lack of effectiveness, however, don't let it stop you. They do hear these things. I know for a fact when they are buried with phone calls and emails and faxes on these things, they do pay attention. We just got to work harder to get the word out to more folks so they're more buried than they already are.
Well, I hope you really stick with it and try to make these people aware that these electronic voting machines are the most insidious things that's gotten into our election system.
Well, I would say that Brad, unfortunately, is in so deep he'll never get out of the election protection racket. Well, thank you, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for reminding. Time for a break, and we'll return with more. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. You can join us. Please do. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We'll deliver on the cheesecake later this hour. Jeff Gannon and Ann Coulter.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Come on in and you will see the Central Avenue Bakery. Smell the bread, try the scones. Everything's a taste you want to take it all home. Vegetarian is a pillar affair. We make our meals in a kosher kitchen. I'll make mine falafel with hummus too. A side of couscous and a baba ghanoush, yeah. Open at 7 every day. Have a cup of coffee or your morning latte. Come on in and sit right down. It's the friendliest place in town. Central Avenue Bakery. In PG.
For an unforgettable omelet experience, visit the Central Avenue Bakery today. 173 Central Avenue at the corner of Dewey, PG.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Are you tired of hearing no when applying for a home loan? Is your credit shot due to late payments, bankruptcy, or recent foreclosure? Do you need help purchasing a home or refinancing your existing home? Well, now there is help every Saturday and Sunday morning from 7 to 8 here on KRXA 540 AM. Listen live to national radio host Ken Michaels of Mortgage Makeovers as he doles out simple answers in plain English to your mortgage and finance questions.
ZNS Auto Sales in Monterey, family-owned for 30 years, is where partnership works. Whether you're a first-time buyer and need a safe economy car, or looking for a truck or SUV or a classic, they have it all. Call ZNS before you make that final decision. ZNS open every day at 1179 Del Monte Boulevard between the Navy Postgraduate School and Lake El Estero. High-quality used cars at the very best prices. ZNS Auto Sales, where partnership works.
The healthcare system is broken.
That doesn't mean you have to be. Capitola Physical Therapy helps you return to the level of function you need with skilled personal attention. Whether it's golf, tennis, walking, or simply getting out of bed and maintaining your balance. Capitola Physical Therapy understands, cares, and knows how to help. Call Capitola Physical Therapy at 475-1200. That's 475-1200.
All you guys on the left, you demonize this president.
In Gitmo, they're not even garden variety POWs. They're the worst of the worst. They don't even receive the protection of the Geneva Conventions.
Man, I really believe that pagan and the abortionist and the feminist and the gays and the lesbians who are actively trying to make that an alternative lifestyle, the ACLU, People for America, all of them who tried to secularize America, I point the thing in their face that you help this happen.
I totally concur. And the problem is we've adopted that agenda at high levels of our government. And so,
I believe Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. And I've got good evidence to believe that.
Undeclared chemical warheads in Iraq.
The declaration that he made is proof positive.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
He's not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com.
Tuesday in November, I took that stroll to cast my ballot at the local poll. Lines were long, but I didn't care. I had water, a hat, and my folding chair. Walked up to the booth, didn't say a word. Sure that my voice would be heard. That button, my vote was sent, but now nobody knows exactly where it went. I lost my vote, it isn't fair. I took a stand, doesn't anybody care? Then I lost my vote, now do you know where did my ballot go?
Ellen Buxtell, they lost my vote. Bradness continues with us here on the PBC show, and we're joined by Dan Ashby, who wants to tell us about an event in Oakland tomorrow about election protection issues. Dan Ashby, welcome back from the Election Defense Alliance.
Thank you very much. Yeah, we're very fortunate, just a coincidence, that these five great election investigators are all in town for the American Advancement of Science Convention presenting papers on election fraud.
Uh-huh.
When we found out about that, and knowing that this price for admission was really prohibitive for the public, we asked them if they'd like to do a free public event, and fortunately they were all available, except Barbara Simon had to give her a regret. She'd already made return travel arrangements. But we have David Griscom from Arizona, Dr. Steve Freeman from Pennsylvania, Attorney Paul Leto, Josh Middledorf, and Stephanie Singer.
Mm-hmm. And who's Josh Middledorf? I've heard his
name.
He's
a mathematical modeler who's done a lot of work with U.S. Count Votes and Election Defense Alliance, analyzing, and also with Steve Freeman and Jonathan Simon and others, analyzing the exit poll controversy of 2004. And now he's taken a good look at what happened in 2006 as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is occurring tomorrow. That's February 17th, starting at 10:30 in the morning and should conclude around 1. It's at the Rock Ridge Library, and that's College Avenue at Manila in Oakland. If you want to do an internet map search, 5366 College Avenue, or just enter Rock Ridge Library. And as I mentioned, that starts at 10:30. What's the format going to be like, Dan?
Each of the speakers is going to give about a 15 to 20 minute talk, some illustrated with projection shows, and then we'll open it up for about a half hour of public questions at the end.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a particular focus? Is it limited to touch screens or broader than that?
It's quite broad, and that's what makes this a great program. There's Stephen Freeman and Josh Middledorf talking about the exit poll controversies compared to other standards of measuring the vote, and then there's Dr. Griscom, who's talking about an actual hack and stack manual fraud that was detected in Arizona to falsify the optical scan ballot counts there.
Mm-hmm.
This is like firsthand direct evidence of fraud in elections and how it can be applied to virtually anywhere where optical scans are used. And then there's also Paul Leto, who's been the litigant in three of the landmark election contests in the last year or so in Snohomish County and in Kentucky and the famous California 50 case.
Right.
And then there's Dr. Stephanie Singer, who works closely with Dr. Freeman in Pennsylvania in a group called Election Integrity, which is devising popular methods of conducting exit polls that citizens could do for themselves so that we're not hostage to the secrecy of the national election pool, Matovsky-type operations.
Mm-hmm. Now, in there, you used a phrase, hack and stack. What's that mean?
Well, it means that a band of insider poll workers conducted an elaborate scheme to substitute provisional ballots and maintain the exact count because they had access to the poll books and knew exactly the characteristics of the voters and who was getting a provisional ballot and who wasn't. They shifted ballots around and in this particular precinct changed the count by 12%. Now, ordinarily, we don't want to cast aspersions, but it is possible that you have inside rings of poll workers who would be able to carry off such a fraud and not be detected. This kind of fraud would have defeated any kind of a recount because mm-hmm. they knew all the numbers in advance and they had them perfectly arranged.
Right. Brad, would you like to add something?
Yeah. Hey, Dan. Good to hear from you. And
hi, Brad.
Thanks for all you're doing. It sounds like it's going to be a great event. And, in fact, yeah, that Arizona hack and stack you're talking about is an extraordinary story. It goes back to 2004 when they had it was actually a Republican primary where that happened. And Arizona is just a mess. I hope that Griscom will also, well, I don't know if he even knows about this yet, but they've just filed a lawsuit in Arizona in Pima County, where it turns out the election director down there, Brad Nelson, had overseen the printing of the results a week or two prior to the elections, and then again right up just in the days before the elections, has actually been printing out the results. Why? I mean, it would be illegal. What he did with them, I don't know, but if you had that kind of information, it would be very handy at the end of a race when you had to figure out where you were going to, you know, buy your robocalls and everything else to have the results so far in advance. So they're filing a suit about that, and it's amazing. In any case, Dan, sounds like a great event, and, well, I'm sorry I'm not going to be there. Wait, nobody invited me. Yeah, what happened?
I didn't know you were going to be up in Monterey this weekend, or I would have. I thought you were down in L.A., but anyhow,
he's
gone out around all of California.
Actually,
we hope that a lot of people will tell their friends. We'd like to have a really good showing for this group of panelists.
Great, and Brad is actually trapped in a parking lot in Riverside right now.
Oh, okay.
That's true. So I could use a weekend off anyway. So have a great event up there. And Dan, thanks for all you're doing. And I do hope people turn out for that because you got a hell of a bunch of experts there and interesting folks with a lot to say.
Yeah.
Dan Ashby, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks
good
for the
talk
time.
To you. That's Dan Ashby from Election Defense Alliance. They're on the web, electiondefensealliance.org. I'll repeat once again, the event is tomorrow, Saturday, 10:30 to 1 at Rock Ridge Library in Oakland. And Brad, up next, I wanted to ask you about the new appointees who have been confirmed by the United States Senate to the National Election Assistance Commission.
Oh, yeah, this is amazing and another unfortunate opportunity to beat up on the Senate Democrats. Before I give you that, though, let me give you this, because Desi just walked in to the Bradmobile here with this week's Rolling Stone,
mm-hmm.
the one with the new guitar god John Mayer on the cover, and they give us a nice mention, so I might as well brag about it for
really?
A minute here. Yeah, they've got a new section on the web in the front of the book, well, somewhere in the middle of the book. And they say, report here, last summer a Princeton University experiment showed that the only thing protecting Diebold's electronic voting machines from hacking was an easily copied key. Turns out things are even more bat poop than that. This report shows that hackers can duplicate the key simply by looking at the photos and of that key, and then they point to our story at bradblog.com, which we talked about three or four weeks ago, so I want to mm-hmm. let you know you scooped Rolling Stone by about a month on this story.
Oh, I feel really good about that, and I can't wait till you're on the cover of Rolling Stone so I can trot out Dr. Hook.
I know you're waiting for, you got it standing by.
Well, good for you. I think I'll actually buy Rolling Stone so I can read that.
Well, you know what? We should support them because, in fact, they have been quite good. They ran those two stories by Bobby Kennedy on election integrity, and
mm-hmm.
of all of the mainstream magazines out there that I can think of, hands down, Rolling Stone has been the best on this.
Let's just say,
Time and Newsweek.
Of the publications that don't feature photos of naked ladies, yes.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, good point.
All right, now tell us about this Federal Election Assistance Commission. It's kind of a murky group, and we've talked to the man whose name I always bungle, who served on that commission and resigned last year.
Yeah, it was DeForest Sories.
There we go.
Who said that the whole thing is just corrupt, pretty much corrupt from top to bottom, and that the White House and the Congress were doing nothing. Now, this was under the Republican-led Congress, of course, when he resigned, that they were doing nothing for election integrity, and that the EAC was had set no standards. The Elections Assistance Commission had set no standards across the country for voting machines, and that our elections were ripe for theft. And he was, by the way, the Bush appointee, the first head of the EAC. Well, as we're learning now, it's much, much worse than that. In fact, we've been doing a series at Brad Blog, which I'd strongly recommend, some reports by Michael Richardson and John, both John Gideon and myself have been helping on those. But Michael Richardson has been digging in to this murky mess that is the EAC and how they have been pretty much keeping everything secret with a wink and a nod and allowing all of these election systems that should not have received certification in the first place, keeping that information secret and going ahead and certifying these systems anyway. And now, today, it even worse, as two new chairmen were nominated to the EAC. One was a nominee of Harry Reid's, and the other was a nominee of, I think, George Bush's, actually. Or the Senate Republicans,
mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, with no oversight hearings whatsoever, and not even a recorded vote so we could see who voted, they went ahead and allowed these two new commissioners onto the EAC by unanimous consent. I mean, no oversight whatsoever, which is particularly astounding considering one of these women has absolutely no experience in elections administration whatsoever.
Well, that must be the Democratic appointee, because here's the scoop on the Republican. Her name is Caroline Hunter,
yep.
And she assisted the Republican National Committee and state parties with HAVA implementation. She also defended the Republican National Committee's attempt to use a list of over 23,000 names for challenges to voters in the 2004 presidential election in Ohio. So she's a specialist in vote suppression.
There's a difference between having experience in elections and election administration. What she has experience in is being an operative. She's a GOP operative, and she's been trying to keep people from being able to vote. She has no experience as an election administrator. Actually, the Democratic nominee does. I believe it's, I'm forgetting the name now, but they're out of Colorado. They were a registrar out there. They've got experience as an administrator, which is, by the way, required for anybody who is named to the EAC, according to the law, according to the Help America Vote Act, actually. And the fact that they did not bother to have oversight hearings, even for this Democrat. Look, this is an opportunity right now with all that has come out about this EAC, about how compromised they are, and about how they've been keeping material secret concerning the failure of the testing, the voting machine testing labs, to actually have any processes. This was Senator Dianne Feinstein's opportunity to do something about it, to talk about it, and I'm sorry to report the Democrats punted entirely on this. So I guess we're beating up on Democrats a lot here today. Perhaps that will help me the next time Jeff Gannon writes about me and calls us a hard-left blogger.
The name you were looking for is Rosemary Rodriguez.
Yes.
She's the Democrat from Colorado, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct, and she is actually a legitimate and very good choice. Nonetheless, there still should have been oversight, because that's the job of the Senate, and as I say, it would have given the Senate the opportunity to begin discussing this extraordinary scam. I mean, this is a far-reaching scam of the EAC, and frankly, you'll see it reported pretty much nowhere else other than bradblog.com in a pretty mind-blowing series by Michael Richardson. So I would recommend that to folks over at bradblog.com, because it's perhaps the most underreported story of the year out of a lot of underreported stories this year.
And just to demonstrate to the Jeff Gannons of this world how fair and balanced you are at Brad Blog, the story about the EAC, the Election Assistance Commission, thank you, includes a press release from People for the American Way, who in another part of the Brad Blog are taken to task for their support of the Rush Holt bill.
Hey, that's right. Politics, I guess, makes the strangest of bedfellows. PFAW has been completely wrong on this whole bill, but on this point, they're absolutely right. The Senate failed to do their oversight. So we'll support whoever is right on the issues. We don't give a damn what party they're with or what groups they're coming out of.
Well, and I'll remind Jeff Gannon about how you urged Rick Santorum to hold off in conceding until all the votes have been counted. We're going to take a break, and we'll return with Brad, and we're going to dish for Jeff Gannon and Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh, too. And if there's time, we'll dip into the Peter B. Collins Tax Deductible Archives for a clip of my interview with Rush Limbaugh about why he only makes fun of lefties.
Wow.
That's ahead, right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized, attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. The Mexicali Grill is open daily for lunch from 11 to 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Let's take a look at that drive home in and around the Monterey Bay area. It's brought to us again by your genuine Toyota service departments. Through March, a visit to your local participating Toyota service center could win you two tickets to the Toyota Save Mart 350. No purchases necessary. See dealer for official rules. Got some problems in Boulder Creek, Bear Creek Road at Huckleberry Lane. Accident still in effect now. Vehicle hit a power pole. That power pole is down. Those lines are alive there. So emergency crews are on the scene trying to protect everyone at that location. Other than that, slow traffic still remains northbound and southbound Highway 101. Slow in and out of Salinas. Also northbound side of 101. A little bit heavier. Bogs down around that San Miguel Canyon turnoff. Also southbound Highway 17. A little heavier now over the summit and continues slow on into Santa Cruz. I'm Alex Daly with traffic on KRXA 540.
Another war. We got our heads up our asses. You know, we're really bored.
We've been hammering Democrats and lefties this hour. A little fair play.
We love natural disasters. Did somebody really drown? We lie whenever we want to. Yeah, you know it's true.
you don't believe us, turn on the nightly news.
Or try the Fox News Channel, where a new show will debut on Sunday, and I'm loath to tell you the exact time because you might watch it. I don't really want to promote it, but it's called the Half-Hour News Hour. It's their response to The Daily Show at Comedy Central. And Brad Friedman, this is produced by Joel Surnow, who is also the producer of 24. He is a friend of Rush Limbaugh and the Hollywood screenwriter who wrote that the TV special that they ran last September 11th.
Path to 9/11.
Yeah, Path to 9/11 on ABC. So it's a small cabal of righties. And I've seen some advanced clips from this show. And, you know, it's not really that funny. I guess if you're a right-winger and you're tired of all the bush-bashing jokes, it's a point of relief. But a lot of the stuff really falls flat.
They got to figure out what to do. I mean, they got nothing to talk about. Thank God they're for Anna Nicole Smith that gives them something to talk about on Fox News again, because it's hard work to ignore everything that's actually going on and come up with fake news to report and fill 24 hours a day. So at least 30 minutes a day now on Sundays, I guess they won't have to report the news.
Well, and they put it on opposite 60 Minutes, which I think will give it a quick death. Or maybe, you know, the people who watch the Fox News Channel just avoid 60 Minutes because it's so damn liberal.
The thing about Fox News, I wouldn't even mind Fox News if they would call it what it is, which is the Republican News Network. That's mm-hmm. what it is. It's putting out their point of view, which is full of lies and nonsense, but at least, you know, that's what it is. And if they want to get together and get Rush Limbaugh and Ann Coulter together to do a comedy show, God love them. Let them do it, and I'll actually tune in. I'd like to see what the hell they're doing.
Well, people can go to YouTube and see some of these clips without supporting the Fox News Channel or showing up in the ratings, so that's one option for you. And they did hire Limbaugh and Ann Coulter to do a skit where Rush plays the President of the United States, and surprise, surprise, Ann Coulter is his VP. A few years back, I had a one-hour interview with Rush Limbaugh when I was on a station in San Francisco and had to follow his program every day. It was quite an experience. And I posed a question to him that I think is germane here, which is, you know, why does he only find humor in people of the left? Let's listen to a little of this.
Why don't you, a caller mentioned this to you one time, make fun of John Sununu, Dan Quayle, Ronald Reagan is a guy who, even if you love him, is a caricature who can be the source of humor. Why do you stay away from those people and simply drive piles into Ted Kennedy?
Well, please don't try to make a moral equivalence here between Kennedy and Reagan or Kennedy and Quayle.
They're public figures. You're a funny guy. Why do you only find humor in the icons of the left?
Well, in all honesty here, it's because I love Reagan, and I very much appreciate what he stood for, and I am sick and tired of the ceaseless ending character assassination and malignment that this man has received, and I don't need to add to it.
Now, did you hear his verbiage there? The ceaseless ending character assassination? I mean, that's not even coherent, Rusty.
I need to defend it. People say that what I do is attack my targets, and I don't do that, Peter. I get up and read the newspaper like everybody else, and I looked at who is attacking somebody. The militant environmentalists are trying to attack the timber industry. Militant vegetarians are attacking the beef industry. So I simply respond. I defend.
Mm-hmm. But often in responding to the militants, you write off an entire movement. Here's a letter from a guy in Stockton, and I won't go into all the details, but essentially he says, well, hey, you quit smoking. You recognize that you were hurting your own personal environment. But you write off even moderate people who want to save the planet, who want to conservation.
I've been very clear about this. The people with whom I have a disagreement are the extremists who wish to damage the capitalistic system of this country in order to see their remedies.
All right, that's enough of that. So you get the idea. And, Limbaugh has this well-rehearsed defense, and Joel Surnow, in an article in the San Francisco Chronicle today, offers a similar argument, that they are there to offset all of the anti-Republican humor that they feel populates the mainstream media.
Nonsense. They are there. And by the way, that interview is gold, Peter. Now I'm going to have to get you to send me that MP3 for the whole hour. Boy, that's good stuff. really, I'd love to hear that. Nice job on that. But in any case, they're not offsetting anything. These guys are operatives from top to bottom. bottom. That's what makes what's going on right now with the Republicans like nothing we have ever seen before. And I hate it when I hear these people say, oh, they're all corrupt Democrats and Republicans. Nonsense. This is a systematic corruption from top to bottom. It starts at the phony grassroots, goes all the way up to the phony president sitting in the White House, and has guys like Rush Limbaugh, Ann Coulter, and phony reporter Jeff Gannon in between. It's these are operatives, nothing else, nothing less than that. Fox News Channel is not a news channel. It's an operative channel, and America has never seen anything like this. This is not legitimate debate.
And segue right into your blog piece about Jeff Gannon, and for our gay male listeners, there's a hot photo of Jeff Gannon if you've always wanted to see it.
Yeah, and for those who aren't gay and male, you'll be happy to know that I didn't put the worst of the photos up that I could have. Believe me. But in any case, yeah, Jeff Gannon, it turns out he was playing the operative game very early on when he was a phony White House reporter right after he was a real gay hooker in the White House, and he was forwarding the nonsense line from the vice president's office that Joe Wilson, you know, was a liar, and that his wife, Valerie Plame, was not really a CIA operative, and so on and so forth. He was there in the early days of that, trying to forward that nonsense. Margie Burns, our Brad Blog correspondent to the Libby trial, has taken a look back at what he was saying back in those press briefings, and now it turns out that the White House apparently has scrubbed from their website some of those briefings where Gannon, the fake Jeff Gannon, his real name is James Gucker, was putting forward some of that nonsense, and he's since responded to it with the same old line that he was pushing 2 years ago, that Joe Wilson is a proven liar, never mind the fact that he's got no such proof, and he is, in fact, the liar.
I think Tim Russert sealed it for Scooter Libby. We're going to have to see how the jury reads it coming up next week. Brad, thanks for joining us from a parking lot in Riverside, California.
My pleasure. My best to you and Trigger. Have a great weekend, my friend.
Pacific Grove Liquors is the one stop on the Monterey Peninsula for fine wines, spirits, and beers at very reasonable prices. Whether you seek the ideal California or imported wine, quality distilled spirits like top shelf tequilas, single malt and blended scotches, and premium vodkas, PG Liquors is your beverage outlet. Love beer? PG Liquors boasts hundreds of handcrafted ales and lagers, as well as all the big names. Make Pacific Grove Liquors at 229 Grand your wine, beer, and liquor store.
PG Liquors reminds you to always drink responsibly.
Have you thought about owning more real estate but don't know where to turn? Are you interested in learning how to make good profit buying and selling real estate? Or do you want to learn how to let your tenants pay the mortgage while you enjoy the equity? If you want to learn the ins and outs of real estate investing, listen to The Real Estate Guys, Sunday nights at 5 on KRXA. You can own more real estate. The Real Estate Guys will show you how. Listen Sunday nights at 5 and on the web at realestateguysradio.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is talking about a new direction after passage of the Iraq War resolution.
This resolution today sets the stage for that new direction, one in which we will focus on other than military initiatives.
She and her fellow Democrats want to use legislative muscle to start a de-escalation in Iraq. 17 Republicans voted with the Democrats today, but not Sam Johnson, a prisoner of war in Vietnam.
Today, let my body serve as a brutal reminder that we must not repeat the mistakes of the past. Instead, learn from them. We must not cut funding for our troops. We must stick by them. We must support them all the way.
I'm Mark Knoller at the White House. So as not to inflate the significance of the resolution, the official reaction here is unusually gentle and mild-mannered. In a written statement, spokesman Tony Snow defended the president's Iraq strategy and stressed that the resolution is non-binding. He said the White House will be focused on getting Congress to approve new funding for U.S. troops in Iraq.
Tomorrow is the start of a three-day weekend, but the Senate will be in session. Democratic leaders will submit the House resolution to a test vote. Travel in parts of the Northeast is getting back to normal about as fast as ice melts in February. Sections of Pennsylvania interstates are still closed. Governor Ed Rendell blames an almost total breakdown in communication. WCBS Radio's Ginny Casola talked to one frustrated traveler.
It's been a mess, just a nightmare.
Bill, who works for Unger Freight Services, expected to make it from Pittsburgh to New York's Kennedy Airport in 8 hours to deliver a package heading to London, but it took almost 3 days.
20 hours on Interstate 78 starting Wednesday afternoon.
We caught up with him on Friday in Bucks County at a stop on the Pennsylvania Turnpike.
It was an odyssey.
What did you do during all that time?
I had a paperback with me.
Paperback sales at airports have been booming as travelers wait hours and hours for flights. JetBlue still has a major backlog. A shortage of crews forced many flights to be canceled today. In the past few years, President Bush has had several non-cancerous lesions removed from his skin. Today, a dermatologist took two moles from his left temple. The White House says tests are expected to show they're benign.